Good morning, everyone. If you are here in the chambers or watching from home, you have joined the City of Miami Beach Financial and Economic Resiliency Committee. And I'm going to turn it over to Rafael so he can tell everybody how they can join us from home. Go ahead.
Good morning. So if you want to log in by Zoom, the webinar ID is 86360595462. That's the webinar ID is 86360595462. Or you can call in by dialing 888-475-4499.
Thank you, Rafael. And we are this morning going to start on item 7. I think we have Commissioner Higgins is joining us as well, but do we have someone from city staff that's going to lead that one off? This is a longstanding item that we've had that I remember picking up from, I think it was Commissioner Malakoff.
Correct. Good morning, everyone. Alba Tarre, Office of Housing and Community Services. This is a reoccurring item that has been on the agenda since 2019. Our team has been working with MBCDC these last couple of months as they have advised the city and the county that they can no longer maintain the portfolio. And so the county's Public Housing Community Development Director, Michael Liu, is here, as well as MBCDC, for the update.
Great, thank you. Let's bring in Commissioner Higgins and see if she would like to say anything or if she wants to comment at the end of whatever presentation we're going to have. Commissioner?
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, everyone. Sorry I could not be there in person. I have a 10 o'clock elsewhere. I'm very pleased to see the Miami Beach Commission discussing this very important issue. Despite years of trying, we find ourselves in the situation where quite a few affordable housing buildings are in a state of outrageous disrepair, and quite frankly, we're at the risk of losing them out of the affordable housing bucket of homes that we have, and you know we don't have nearly enough. Director Liu is there to speak on behalf of the county, but I want you to know that he has my complete support. He and I, along with Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez and your Miami Beach housing team, did indeed meet with their board. We made it very clear that Miami-Dade County is financially capable of assuming operational control of these facilities and is able over the long run to make sure that the necessary physical upgrades to make these buildings much more livable and habitable. I've spoken to Mayor Daniela Levine Cava, so you have my commitment, you have her commitment, and you have PHCD's commitment that the county is financially able to assume these responsibilities. These buildings need many, probably millions of dollars in upgrades and repairs, and we're prepared to do that. The director can describe the process, but we are prepared to essentially assume the operations. It probably takes us about 2 weeks to do that, and then we would work out the full financial process. And then in conversations with some of the City of Miami Beach, there might be a willingness for the City of Miami Beach to operate a couple of these buildings. And my suggestion, and I think we've come to a basic agreement that the best approach is one transaction where the county deals with sort of the initial getting this safely in control and safely in a financial institution, meaning the county that can afford it. And then what we would do is we would just work directly with you all in Miami Beach. If you'd like one building to be transferred, two buildings to be transferred, we'll make that happen after we have safely delivered these buildings into financial security with an organization, meaning the county that can afford to fund them in the years to come. So we at our side are ready, willing, and able to take action. And I have certainly encouraged the board of Miami to do the right thing. People are living in some cases terrible conditions, and there have been no upgrades made to the buildings. And as far as I can tell, they cannot pay their bills. And they do need someone to do that for them, and we're ready. So that's it. Thank you. I appreciate you all listening to us and caring for the residents that do need affordable housing.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate your support on this. And yeah, it's been more than two years now that I've been here, that I've been tracking this and inspecting buildings and so forth. And there certainly is some financial concern. So we appreciate your willingness to help especially the people that are living in these facilities. So so I'd like to recognize. Are you here representing the agency?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll go ahead and recognize you then and let you speak.
Of course. Good morning, commissioners and city staff. My name is Christian Arango. I'm the chief of operations for the Miami Beach CDC. Along with me is...
Yes, hi. Good morning, Commissioner Shahrzad Imami, and I am counsel for Miami Beach CDC. I'm a partner at the law firm of Nelson Mullins.
Okay, so you're the commissioner, and so it's our understanding that you're going to be working with the county to transfer the properties. Is that correct?
Currently, the board has not voted on the final plan. 2 weeks ago, we did have a Zoom meeting with members of Miami-Dade County, Director Liu and Clarence and Commissioner Higgins as well. And the new news as of 2 weeks ago is that the county stated at the meeting that they would be willing to pay off the parent level liabilities and debts of the MBCDC. Our issue before, of course, was the county wanted a direct transfer of the entire portfolio, but of course, under the federal bankruptcy code, you can't transfer assets for no consideration and then at the parent level file for bankruptcy, because then your parent level creditors will allege that that is either a preferential transfer or a fraudulent transfer. So for many, many years, there was this pressure on the CDC, why don't you just give all of your buildings to Miami-Dade County and then file bankruptcy and go away? Well, that's not something that we can do. So at the meeting 2 weeks ago, the county did say that they were willing to take on the parent-level liabilities and pay those debts sort of in exchange for a transfer of the portfolio. So the board is considering that option. We're going to have a meeting either tomorrow or the next day to take all of this into consideration. We are up against the clock, though. This really is a timing situation. You know, we have debts and liabilities and a lump sum insurance premium that is due in 2 weeks?
2 weeks, correct.
In 2 weeks. And we have to be able to continue to operate as a corporation at the parent level while this transfer is taking place. And there are some buildings that the county does not have a lien position in. So I know that from the county's perspective, it's probably quick and easy to do a transfer of those properties where they have a lien interest. But the buildings where they don't, we're going to have to go through lender consents and things like that. And as a CDC, I'm not sure that we can directly put into the county's control the operation and management of buildings where they have no security interest in those buildings. So we're going to have to figure out some way that the CDC can continue to operate some of those properties during the period of time that we work through a transfer. Christian laid out, this is the recent update as of today. So I think, do all the commissioners have this yet?
No, I'm going to provide this.
Okay, can you please provide them with a copy of that? That's the most recent update of the CDC's financials. It's the updated audit findings, recent findings related to some of the buildings from a structural basis, and sort of the progress that the CDC has made over the past 3 to 4 years. I want to say and make it clear here that this is not the same organization as it was 10, 12 years ago.
Okay, so I'm gonna pause there for a moment, and I've been tracking this for more than 2 years. The agency has not been financially viable, which is why we are here today, right?
We agree with that.
So
that's right.
I know, but
without any government subsidy coming into a portfolio that's mainly at or below 50% of AMI, an organization like this can't survive. So we agree with you. So if there's not going to be any direct subsidy from the city of Miami Beach to the CDC in these buildings, or there's not going to be any direct subsidy from the county to these buildings through the CDC, then you're right. The organization has no choice but to transfer assets. So that's all I want to say. You know, we have come from 11 audit findings as of 4 years ago down to one. So there has been a heavy lift on the part of the administration with the CDC and the board to rectify a lot of the issues, pretty much all of the issues that were outstanding. But of course, the only issue that still remains is the fact that the rents coming in do not cover operating expenses. It's not an issue of mismanagement. It's just an economic issue at this point, which we understand and we agree with you, Commissioner Richardson.
Yeah, no, it is an economic issue. But, you know, for 2 years I've been hearing how it's a new organization, and also there have been delays on getting audits and so forth. And I have been incredibly patient with you all for more than 2 years. But we find ourselves in the situation that we are. And the ones that are really suffering are the people that are in these buildings, that, and I've inspected almost all of them. And many of them are in conditions that you and I and most people here would not want to live in. Right. So with that, I'm going to pause it. I want to hear from Director Liu. If you could approach, please. I want to hear from the county and get their perspective, and then we'll see where we're at. Good morning, Director.
Good morning, and I appreciate the chance to be here this morning to you and the members of the committee. Michael Liu, Director of Public Housing and Community Development. We're happy to hear that there is a sentiment toward transfer of the properties to us. I believe that their portfolio, like any other portfolio that's owned by you or me or anyone else, can be transferred to us, whether or not there is a specific lien on those properties. It's based on the will of the organization. We can make that work. We are prepared, just as Commissioner Higgins pointed out, to act quickly, just as we did on the Madison a couple years ago. Where we were able to, without having to go back to BCC for operational reasons and based on the transfer, immediately take over the operations and move to do whatever necessary repairs that there are. To the extent that there's a need to negotiate with any of the senior lenders, I'm very confident that with the county stepping in to assist that we can work with them, especially if we're willing to pay off the actual liens on any of the properties. So we're prepared to work with Miami Beach CDC, to work with the city to ensure that these units are kept affordable for your community, for Miami-Dade County, for the city of Miami Beach.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. So I'm going to close out this item at this point. I'm going to leave it to the county and the agency to try to work out something. I'm available. This commission is available. I certainly would like to hear from my colleagues if they have anything to say on it. But and Alwa, I'm going to leave it to you to get back in touch with me on this item if you think it needs to be brought back. And John, let's leave it. We'll leave it open for a month to see if we need to bring it back. But go ahead, Commissioner Samuel.
Thank you, Commissioner Richardson, and I agree with very much with your perspective. Our primary interest is in our residents, and I think we all share that, including the CDC, who's been working hard as well. Commissioner Higgins is a dear friend of Miami Beach, and she makes housing a real priority when she speaks on that topic. I especially listen. So I think the only question I have probably is for the city administration, Alba. You know, is there any action at this moment this body needs to take? Is there anything we as a city can do to protect the interest of our residents?
No, I think we're supporting MBCDC and supporting the county and whatever, you know, support we can provide. And so we're willing and open, and we're providing as much technical assistance as possible. So at this time, no.
Okay, that's all I have.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll just leave it to you to get back to me if we need to bring this back for any sort of status report. And Commissioner Higgins, I will I'll be looking forward to in the future talking to you about a couple of these assets that I would like to see the city seal on. So thank you for your participation. So with that, we're going to close this
thank
item.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you. Okay, I had a request. I think it was John number 8. Somebody, we want to take that one. So let's call up item 8. This is an update from economic development. Is that right? Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Vice Chair and Commissioner. Thank you for taking this item a little early today. We do have a special guest on the line who does have to depart at about 10:15, so we wanted to get started earlier. So the last time this item was heard was in October of last year. We normally provide a presentation quarterly to tell you about what we're doing. Sorry, Rick was ready for another item that we have. So we do have a recommendation today for our job creation incentive program. We have on the line Arthur Penn of Pennant Park, an investment advisory firm. And they are coming to the city of Miami Beach with 10 jobs in the first year and 20 jobs over a four-year period. They're going to be taking up a 5,500 square foot space at 1691 Michigan in the Wicks building very close to here. Their average wages will be about $350,000 per year, and that's the highest that we've seen through this program, so we're very excited about that. Their lease will be for 5.5 years, and they really want to invest in the community, and if you would allow Art to weigh in and talk about his decision to come to Miami Beach, we'd appreciate that.
Sure. Commissioner Ariel, this is your item. Can we hear from the guest first?
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's hear from our guest, then go ahead and let's bring them in. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Art Penn. I'm founder and managing partner of Penn & Park Investment Advisors. We're an investment management firm. We manage about $6 billion of assets under management, and our primary business is lending capital to small, mid-sized businesses around the United States. And the capital that we have to lend comes from investors, a variety of institutional investors, including pension funds, insurance companies, large asset managers, as well as individual investors around the country who like the risk-adjusted returns of the loans that we make to the small and mid-sized businesses. I came to Miami Beach for vacation last January of 2021. For a 10-day vacation. I kept extending that vacation and ended up spending basically the entire winter in Miami Beach, and realized I had the best winter of my life. We bought an apartment in mid-beach, and as the spring and summer worked its way into the fall, we made the decision to relocate the headquarters of our company to Miami Beach. We have about 55 employees to date. The vast majority at this point are in New York City. We also have offices in Chicago, Houston, and Los Angeles. And as Raquel said, we have a number of employees today in Miami Beach, and we're looking to grow that footprint and have a real center of gravity in Miami Beach over time. We also, when we open up an office, or even this is our headquarters, we'd like to get involved in the community and be an active, engaged member of the community, be a positive force in the community. So we're really excited to have this opportunity, and we're really excited to be interacting with this commission that's focused on economic development. It just feels very nice to be welcomed or potentially welcomed into the community, and I want to thank everybody for the opportunity today.
Thank you very much, and we welcome you to Miami Beach. And I think you described what all of us have known for a long time and why we live here. It's just the most amazing place to be. So, Commissioner?
No, just thank you for joining us this morning. Thank you for investing in our community. I think you made a very wise decision. And so, you know, lots of luck to you and your company. Hopefully great things will happen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me also add my thanks and welcome to Paradise. Great to hear of your interest in being engaged in our community. We wish you the best. You're in very capable hands with our city administration and Raquel, and I believe I speak for my colleagues. We're here to do everything we can to support our business environment. I bet you have a few colleagues and friends you can tell about your decision. We would appreciate that. So welcome, and we look forward to seeing more of your organization here. I do have one follow-up, Raquel, for you. We had talked about this incentive program, which we're having just incredible results in like less than a year here, that we might want to expand it for smaller, more entrepreneurial businesses. Can you just give us an update on your thinking and where that one is?
Absolutely. And just before I do that, I do want to acknowledge Ms. Sabrina Ford, also here with Pennant Park.
Oh,
she's representing the company in person today. And I wasn't aware that she had come into chambers.
That's great. So well, welcome, Sabrina.
If you'd like to say anything, we'll invite you to do that.
Oh, thank you. I've been with Pennant Park for 10 years. I relocated from New York. I've found a long-term career opportunity and growth with Pennant Park. I'm excited for the opportunity here in Miami Beach. Mr. Penn is very dedicated. He's planting the seeds there for our firm. So it's exciting for all of us.
Well, good. Thank you for being here, and welcome to Miami Beach.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Raquel.
Thank you. So what we realized through the Job Creation Incentive Program is that we have a employment threshold of 10 employees, so that's the minimum. And so some of the smaller firms that are at the 10 number, perhaps they may not be as inclined to participate because of the cap that exists per employee. So, for example, we currently have a $600 per employee amount. If you have a larger company, that is going to allow your incentive to be greater. Any incentive is capped at $60,000 per year, 4 years for new to market, 3 years for existing expanding businesses. What we would like to do is increase the per employee amount by $50, but for targeted or sub-targeted businesses within cryptocurrency, within health and wellness, within resiliency tech, sustainability tech, arts and culture, any of those subcategories of tech and financial services that speak to the City of Miami Beach's brand. So one of the recommendations from MBU that we discussed the last time, we thought was valuable. We thought we could find a way to further incentivize those types of businesses to come here and also appeal more to those smaller companies. And so that was something that we have been exploring, and we can definitely go further with that if you approve of going in that direction.
Mr. Chair, if I may. So if I heard right, $50 delta, have you dimensionalized on an annual basis? Doesn't sound like a whole ton of money. What order of magnitude we're talking about?
I don't think this would make a dent in the funding for this program because okay. Most of these smaller companies, 10 employees, you're going to get an incentive about $15,000 to $20,000 maximum, and we're budgeting $180,000 per year. So we don't think that it would hurt us in any way to make this adjustment to allow for a more focused effort, and we're also going to be amplifying that through our targeted messaging and marketing communication. So we think that this could benefit us in two ways, to incorporate more small businesses and also to focus on that subgroup or sub-targeted industries that align with the city's brand and profile.
Well, you certainly have built a lot of confidence in me and the efforts and the results we're having. It sounds like a nominal type of investment. Timing's great with Bitcoin coming and eMERGE. So if I'm hearing that is your recommendation, the recommendation of the administration, I would be happy to move that. I would assume you'd want action from the full commission, so I would be happy to make that motion if my colleagues are inclined.
So procedurally, John, what do we need to do on that, since that would be, an amendment to the program? Would we have to send that back to the commission? And
yeah. That's what we would do. We would just amend the program.
Okay. Can we send it back to the commission, or would we need a separate item to be brought to the commission?
I think you could. I'll check, but I believe you could probably, since it was discussed here at this item, there could be a recommendation coming from the committee for it. Because it's kind of a general topic, the quarterly update. So.
That's right. If you have a motion, then we'll go to commission to accept the recommendation of finance committee to amend the program.
Okay. So if that was the form of a motion,
it was.
I'll second it, and then we'll send it back to the commission to see if we can get them to accept the recommendation of the administration and this committee. Okay.
Thank you. So just to briefly touch on a few more things that the department has been working on in terms of business attraction and retention and community revitalization. So last month, on February 23rd, the administration presented on the ADCD vision plan, and the commission authorized preparation of an RFQ for Ocean Drive, and that process is underway, and we'll come back to the city commission. The vacant storefront cover program, since the last time we discussed this item, we've had 14 new properties participate in the program, which is amazing because we're now touching in North Beach and Mid Beach, areas that previously didn't participate as heavily as South Beach, and so we're excited about our progress in that area. The Class A office on Lincoln Lane project, we'll discuss that more later in detail. Our Collins Park Artist Workforce Housing project, that is nearing completion of the permit process. We expect the permit to be issued any day now, and financial closing is planned for May of 2022. We will come back to you with details on a groundbreaking ceremony. We also have some new resources on the way for the month of May. We are engaging with Prospera. They're going to be providing us with technical assistance services, both virtual and in person, for our small business community. And we're launching that for International Economic Development Week. We also have the business resource guide that was discussed yesterday at Neighborhoods. That's going to be launched at that time. We do want to touch on the commercial lease subsidy program. We did not provide a lot of details on the potential program that we anticipated to discuss this month. And essentially, last budget cycle, we got approval to do a pilot program in order for us to change the character of the ADCD. One of the things that we want to incorporate more of in the ADCD is the C part, which is culture. And so we wanted to subsidize tenants and landlords who would offer business opportunities or activations that are tied to cultural programming, including experiential retail and artisanal retail. We have since, the administration, as well as the city attorney's office, has had a discussion with Commissioner Fernandez, and he has some ideas about how we can transition legal nonconforming uses to permitted uses, and we thought that that might blend very well with our ideas for the commercial lease subsidy program. And so what we're doing now, or what we intend to do, is further develop that and then come back to FERC in May to discuss how that program could work. I thought that the commissioner might be present today, but I can say that his goal would be to change the nature and the character of the business community in the district, and we think that aligns with what the intent of the commercial lease subsidy program was for.
Okay, so along those same lines, I know that we discussed it in Neighborhoods as well. I asked staff to look at zoning, potential zoning opportunities and so forth, especially with some of the outdoor venues that may be considering enclosing themselves, but that may require some sort of floor area ratio adjustment. And I think we should look at that because along with changing the nature of some of these locations, there may be need to be physical changes as well. And if we want to encourage them to make those physical changes, we may need zoning changes to do that. So I want to make sure that we're teed up on that. With that, I'd like to close this item out. That's okay with you guys.
We do have a little bit more, if you would indulge. We have a presentation on our Bitcoin activation in Emerge Americas. This committee had asked us to be sure to participate in trade shows and conferences, and we presented a proposal on what we would do for this fiscal year with a plan to expand that for next year. And, you know, we don't have to go into detail if you know, there's not enough time. We also have our marketing campaign that we've been working on with the Marketing and Communications Department, as well as a third-party company, and we wanted to touch on that. Included in your memorandum are excerpts and selected press releases and newsletters showing our engagement and showing some of the coverage that we've had as of late. And so we're really proud of the direction that we're headed in. And if you would like to go further into details on the marketing campaign, we can talk about that, or we can table that for another
item. I know we're tight on time, and I appreciate that. I would like the two-minute executive summary. These conferences are big deals that come into the convention. Right. If you would, hear the executive summary if you're game.
I think that's terrific. Let's do the two-minute executive summary.
Absolutely. Inviting now Heather Shaw, the Assistant Director of Economic Development, coming to us from Tourism and Culture.
Good morning, Commissioners and Chair. So just to give you a two-minute quick of what we've done since we last met with you, we've been to a number of conferences and events. We attended the iConnections, which is a fintech event that was earlier this year, and we had the mayor to speak at the event, and as well as we engaged with them. The primary purpose for our attendance there is to introduce ourselves, to network, to increase our list of prospects for businesses that can move to Miami Beach. We also attended the FPL Powering Florida Illuminations event, which was a private event that was hosted by FPL for all of the economic development professionals in the state of Florida, so we could share best practices as well as contacts and networking. We also went to the South Florida Development Conference to talk about how we can engage more in our RDAs and CRAs. And Raquel participated in the Commercial Observer's annual South Florida event, where we also shared the path and journey for Miami Beach in terms of recruiting new businesses and startups. And then, of course, we are active in Bitcoin that is going to take place next week. We are starting on the 5th. We're having a thought leadership program with leading author of Kryptonians and a venture capitalist who is going to lead a discussion on the emergence of cryptocurrency and its impact on Miami Beach. And then we have a booth, booth 463 in Bitcoin from April 6th to the 8th. And we're going to have engaging activities where we're going to also have interviews, Jopin Putra, who is our venture capitalist. She's going to be there to answer questions, again, to engage this audience. Bitcoin is expected to attract more than 6,000 people a day, so we're excited about that. And then we also will be activating an Emerge with a booth as well. We're going to do that in collaboration with our IT department, and we're doing the Bitcoin and Emerge activations in partnership with the Beacon Council as well. They're also participating with us, so we can leverage countywide our resources. And then, as Raquel mentioned, during Tech Week and International Economic Development Week, we are going to have a few activations there. And then we've also planned to start doing these thought leaderships quarterly. So we'll bring in thought leaders so we can have conversations about how Miami Beach is moving the industry and how we're incentivizing the industry. And then for the next fiscal year, we're going to target more local, regional, and national, and then explore how we can also go international in potentially 2024.
Just to add to that, we will also be having an activation at the Formula One FTX event that's happening here in the city at Lomas Park.
Exactly.
Mr. Chair, if I could, that's a great update. Love the proactive nature of what we're doing. Miami Beach is going to be the center of the tech world with eMERGE, Bitcoin, blockchain, digital currency, all here. I very much appreciate the effort. And in fact, we're going to recognize those shows on Wednesday the 6th with an award. We're going to have some folks from both of those shows at the commission. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that was a very helpful update.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We'll close this item. That's number 8. Gentlemen, do we have any other, you have any other requests? Lisette, what item are you guys here for?
Number 9?
Let's go ahead and do that then. Discuss the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau partnership planning with the City of Miami. Yep. Commissioner Samuel, this
is your say a word. We obviously recognize the importance of our partnership with the GMCVB. We just went through an extensive process where we talked about the importance of sort of aligning our efforts as it related to branding and as it related to having some Miami Beach-specific actions. So in the spirit of partnership, I believe it's important that we understand, at least at an executive level, sort of the efforts that are underway specifically related to Miami Beach, the goals in place so that we can sort of observe progress. So I don't anticipate action today, colleagues, but I thought it'd be helpful that we set the scene and we can decide as a body how frequently we'd like an update of this sort. With that, I'd like to recognize Lisette.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Since 1984, the city has contracted the GMCVB to promote the Miami Beach Convention Center and Miami Beach as a destination. The GMCVB is primarily responsible for marketing, pursuing, and securing Miami Beach Convention Center sales and Miami Beach Destination Marketing. On October 1st, 2021, the city and GMCBB executed a new five-year agreement, and the terms enhanced previous agreement, and it's divided into three areas of performance. One is promotion and sales of the Miami Beach Convention Center and campus. Two is promotion and destination marketing of the city. And three, leadership membership in the GMCBB administration. This morning we have from the GMCBB, David Whitaker, CEO and President, Gisela Marti, Vice President of Marketing and Tourism, and Carol Motley, Senior Vice President of Convention and Sales. They have a presentation to give you an update on their sales and marketing goals for fiscal year 21-22.
You have a presentation for us?
I do.
So as long as it's not an hour, we're on a timeline here. Yeah. So we'll recognize you and welcome to the chambers.
Thank you to all of you and staff. And thank you personally. All three of you have made me feel so welcome in my first 6 months back. And I look forward to the opportunity of collaborating with you. And I commend you for making this part of the process. And Commissioner Fernandez, a member of our executive committee appointed by the mayor. In fact, we just had our executive committee 2 days ago. It was an hour and a half meeting, but I want to reassure you that I don't have an hour and a half presentation for you here today. That said, I would love at the end a little direction about in the future what you'd like to hear from us, as I will continue to engage with you one-on-one, obviously in the entire commission and mayor and manager, but you know, give us some guidance based on what you're hearing today on what you'd like to hear more of, how we can delve in. And by the way, I want to commend the economic development team and Raquel, especially the team, that proactiveness. You know, that's a real engine to help this destination be a great place to live, work, play, and visit. And so there's a lot of synergy between these engines, and so we welcome the opportunity to support. I do want to briefly in context, you know, our oversight is important. We want to make sure that in the months and years to come, especially these next 5 years. So as I said, Commissioner Fernandez, along with your city managers, are members of our executive committee. We also have several members of our board, including with us today, Grisette Rook-Marcos. Grisette is a member of the VCA. Her chair, Steve Atkins, also a member of our board. We have several of the beach hoteliers on our board. So, you know, we're an association of about 1,000 members, about a third of those members, hotels, restaurants, clubs, vendors of the convention center. They're part of our constituency. There's also the Miami Beach Advisory Committee, had a meeting 2 weeks ago. We gave a similar presentation to them. Larry Harrop, who is your chair of that, each of you have appointed someone to that committee. I encourage you to stay close to them and let them stay close to you as they're intimately engaged with us. We also have a finance committee that met 2 weeks ago, really getting into the detail and granular numbers. And we're thrilled that John is a member of the finance committee. Thank you, John, for your guidance and oversight. And you can also engage with him on specific granular questions at any time about how we're managing our resources and including the great partnership we have with the beach. Just for context, our operating budget this year, $35.7 million, $5.4 million, which is a direct contribution through this contract. So thank you for that great support. More importantly than the $5.4 million is that almost 40% of our hotels our Miami Beach hotels, so our constituents on Miami Beach are critically important to our mutual success. Let's jump in with some slides, and I'll look here, and I guess I'll just say next slide, please. That will be so. If we go to the next slide and the next slide, just real quickly, these are some barometers of how we're doing demand, heads and beds. I used to say butts and beds, but I don't think you can say butts and beds anymore. But heads and beds, and you can see the slow but steady recovery. We've just tracked this for a six-month rolling period. And the demand, in fact, is 12.6%. Now, this is all of Miami-Dade County. In a moment, I have the Miami Beach numbers. But as a county, it's really exciting, quite frankly, that our demand is actually 12.6% ahead of where we were in 2019, our best of times before COVID. So we've really come back in a really encouraging way. There are different numbers within these numbers, and I'll talk a bit about that, but that's just really encouraging. The next slide is the Miami Beach specific numbers. It mirrors the same growth. About 30% of our hotel rooms are on Miami Beach, so the hotel demand tends to mirror. And Miami Beach was a bit ahead of, especially this time of year, it's the most popular time to be in Miami Beach. But even with that said, demand is up, you know, 8% over what it was 2 years ago for Miami Beach, and that's encouraging. The next slide, which is equally encouraging, is the weekly occupancy. Now, we've added 10% more hotel rooms in Miami Beach, I mean in the community. And so, you know, I would argue that we're up 12% because, you know, you've added 10% of rooms. But again, occupancy is growing steadily, 87. We are the envy of the country, quite frankly, right now. And again, this is the best of times with the weather and the events that we're having. But that's just fantastic to be 87.8% occupied. And the next slide, of course, this is the Miami Beach number. It tends to mirror the same. 86.9, we're right there tracking. And again, slightly ahead of where we were, but the next slide really gives you that indication of opportunities. Since 2019, or last year, 2021, we added 10 new hotels. You know, hotel investors are going to continue to see the potential, the success. I'm also personally excited about the kind of new hotels we're adding. You know, the Good Time Hotel, the Moxie. These are really well-established brands. It's 6.8% more inventory, so that gives us a chance to fill those. And like I said, almost 40% of our hotels are on Miami Beach. The next slide. This is the real story, average daily rate. Unbelievably almost, probably not a good choice of words, but unbelievably, incredibly, our ADR compared to 2019 for the county is up 37.3%. So our hotel community has made a conscious decision to target and to establish a value proposition. And again, it's part of the experience. It's part of why this is such a popular destination. But that's just, now, this will generate additional resources for all of us, including the city. And if you go to the next slide, this is even a more incredible story. Average daily rate on Miami Beach for the last, you know, this just, again, comparing year over year, last week it was up almost 50% of where it was 2 years ago. Now, the great news is that's going to be more resources for all of us, and we'll have more conversations about that moving forward as well. But it's just an exciting time. Now,
can I interrupt you for a second? Just
sure.
Colleagues. But it's funny when you look at – funny, it's not the wrong word. When you look at these average daily rates, last year at this time versus where we're at today, some of the chaos we were seeing last year I think is attributable to the very low rates we had during the height of COVID, people just coming down here.
Yep, great
and,
point.
And partying. So, you know, my personal feeling is keep that as high as possible.
Well, you're absolutely right. And in fact, the value, and my colleague in a moment, when we start talking about marketing and in the future, as we continue to talk about rebranding the city and expanding our assets and our reputation, to get a higher paying, more sophisticated art and culture, the LGBTQ plus community, event-driven events like the Formula One, Super Bowls, et cetera, the great music festivals, the history, the architecture. So what is going to attract the highest spending visitor, Miami Beach is perfectly aligned with. And it's just really now mining that and targeting that and telling that story. And we're going to talk about that more briefly in a moment. If you go to the next slide, I'm going to wrap up here. I do want to just thank you. You know, we have our golf tournament. In fact, it's going to be at the Miami Beach Golf Club. I'd love for you to come by that day. We raise money for our scholarships for African-American students to go to FIU, Miami-Dade College, and Florida Memorial University. And we're quite proud of the diversity of that program in terms of getting the talent pipeline built. And so come join us. We're going to raise probably after expenses about $40,000 for scholarships. And the next slide just simply thanks, including a lot of Miami Beach institutions who are the sponsors of foursomes. And really, this is a very program that's been in place for since 1990. But just something that we're quite proud of, our Black Hospitality Initiative, which we'll talk more about in the future. If you go to the next slide, I'm going to now perhaps turn the gavel over. One of the contracts that Lisette talked about, and again, Lisette, thank you for your partnership and all the staff, but Lisette is kind of our day-to-day manager. One of our primary goals is to fill the Miami Beach Convention Center. Not only today with all the conventions that we're welcoming that we booked and sold a couple of years ago, but booking this fabulous new building moving forward, especially the changes to the building and the new host hotel opportunity. So with that, I'm delighted to introduce our new senior vice president. I stole Carol from Washington, D.C. One of the first things I did when I got here, we needed to have an incredibly talented sales leader. She's one of the best in the country, and I'm thrilled that she's accepted our invitation to join us from Washington and be in here in Miami Beach. So take it away.
Good morning, welcome. Commissioner and committee. One of our goals, as David spoke about, is the convention center, the Miami Beach Convention Center. Our goal to date is 17.
Next slide, please. I'm sorry,
next
Carol.
Slide.
You're going to
yes,
have to advance
slide,
the slides.
Please. There you go. Our goal with the Miami Beach Convention Center is 17 P1, P2 citywides. Currently, we are sitting at 4. In addition to that, we are responsible for in-hotel bookings on Miami Beach as well. A third of the hotels are Miami Beach, so part of our hotel business, as part of our in-hotel business. We work very closely with the city staff as well as the hotel task force to set these numbers that are the second set of goals that you see. To date, of 163 leads, 71 of those leads have been booked in Miami Beach hotels, and we will continue that effort. Next slide, please. Part of that goal as well, and a big component of it, is having the prospects out there to go after, to bring in this business to the Miami Beach Convention Center. So that is what these numbers are. We work closely with setting those goals. We feel very comfortable with them, and we'll continue prospecting along to fill that 17. Next slide. It's always great to have those hot prospects. That's what we need. We need those organizations that have committed to sending us their specifications on leads that they want to place in Miami Beach Convention Center. That is what this page and the next slide, please, actually represents, are those specs that we will be receiving very shortly here and then put forth proposals for future bids. Next slide.
We want to win about six of those before the end of the year to get to the 17 goal.
Absolutely. Which this three here, we have four, as I mentioned earlier. These three will be closing very shortly, which will add to that four and make seven. And then from there, I have 10 more to go after. But that is where those hot prospects come in.
That million-dollar roundtable, we had that here a couple years back. Yeah,
we did.
That was an interesting crowd.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they are actually, the license agreement should be signed very shortly here, hoping within the week.
And Commissioner, that's a great example. It's an incentive trip for them. They're rewarding their top salespeople around the country. And they're not interested in the cheapest rate. They're interested in the experience for their delegates. And that's what we have to do. We can't just bring conventions where we're the most affordable destination.
Right.
We need to bring conventions that want to experience what the Miami Beach Convention Center and Miami Beach have to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're going to have conversations more and more about branding, but I personally, I want to see us go in that direction.
Absolutely.
Versus, you know, sort of the budget crowd.
Absolutely. Any questions for me?
Okay. I guess my question is there anything that we can do for you to help you do your job better?
Well, the first is a big thank you to the city, the county, where they were involved, but obviously the $640 million investment in the Miami Beach Convention Center is a game changer. To have the functionality with the ballrooms, to have the campus approach now, to have this incredible new asset and the interest that we've already seen about having a host hotel. That's going to be a game changer, as we all know. So, quite frankly, we can't wait. You know, we're super excited about November 2025. We're already getting tremendous interest in bookings for 26, 27, 28. We have to fill that building before 25. And so, you know, through construction and through a lot of things will still plow forward, but that's going to be a game changer. So I can't thank the city enough for your vision and investment. And we're hosting a major convention right now over there. They had the ribbon cutting yesterday. And to have that business traveler back on Miami Beach is just a welcome sight.
Yeah, thank you. So go ahead.
If I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And David, good to see you again. Carol, welcome. And
thank you.
Pleasure to have you. Looks like we're making some good progress on the convention center side of it, and we look forward to hearing more about that with our fine colleague on board. We feel pretty good about the governance and that side of it. And this question may be for Lizette, or if you all want to take a shot at it, that second goal of sort of promoting the destination, more operationally, how are we sort of dialing up the Miami Beach specific side? That was a big part of that contract. I'd love to hear a little more specifics about either what we've done or what we're going to do to make that come to life.
Commissioner, I'll defer to Lisette.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish Rolando Ayedo, our chief operating officer, he's actually in Israel on a mission with the chamber. But it's a very detailed strategy. In fact, in a moment, Gisela, our vice president of marketing, is going to talk about the branding exercise that we've just started. It will be completing in a few months. That's going to be a big area of interest for all of us, including you. We also have some, you know, roughly half of our initiatives that are Miami Beach specific, and Lisette can talk about some of those. And then half of us promoting the entirety of the destination, because what's good for Miami Beach is good for Miami and vice versa. But Lisette, let me defer to you in terms of any specifics that you think is important for your colleagues.
Sure. Since June 2023, when we approved the Miami Beach Live pilot program, the GMCVB initiated the VMLYNR, their PR agency. They've been working with us closely with tourism and culture and our communications department. They have also started the reimagining campaign for Miami Beach since prior to the execution of their agreement. I know that Gisela Marti is here, and we also have from our communications department, Matt Kenny, who can give you a little bit more in-depth update on marketing efforts for the city of Miami Beach.
Okay, that helps, and I know we have a busy agenda as usual. I just want to underline, at least from my standpoint, that was sort of the new news in the contract. That was a really important goal. So I'm hearing some things that sound like we're heading in the right direction. That continues to be a focus. I don't think there's action today, colleagues. I don't know how frequently you want to have a conversation like this, be it quarterly or a couple times a year. I just think the convention center is a critical asset. The GMCVB is an important partnership, and I want to make sure that we are playing our role to make sure they have what they need and that we are getting the benefits of the new contract that we agreed to. Thank you. Yeah.
And Commissioner, you're right. The contract was new, and we insisted upon having it structured in a little bit different way, and we appreciate all the parties coming together to make that happen. You know, I think maybe on a quarterly basis we can get an update, and I'll recognize you in just a second, Commissioner Fernandez, and welcome. Thank you for coming. You know, for me, I'm going to be looking for a report at the end of the fiscal year to let us know how that money that was set aside to be specific to Miami Beach, how it was used, and ways that we may be able to improve that going forward, because we do want to make sure, since we're such an important partner, that Miami Beach gets their due and their name out there, right? So with that, I know, Commissioner Fernandez, you wanted something, so go ahead. I'll recognize you.
Sure, and I want to thank Director Whitaker for being here, Ms. Mowley as well, and welcome her to the team from D.C. It's good to have you here. And also highlight the fact that they're expanding their convention sales team. And it's one of the things that came up at our board meeting earlier this week, the efforts that the Bureau is putting into convention sales, which for us is so important, because that's the quality tourists that we want to be attracting to Miami Beach that's going to dine and shop and contribute to our economy. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because as a member of the City Commission, I'm grateful for the interest and the focus on expanding that convention sales team. For us, I think is essential. And the great news that pre-pandemic, when we compare the numbers today, the average daily room rate today compared to pre-pandemic, up 48.2%, notwithstanding the increase in inventory. And that, for us, I think, is the great news out there. We have, you know, sometimes we have bad news, but we have really good news as well coming out of Miami Beach, and I think that's part of that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to add that the GMCVB meets with the Tourism and Culture Department, with Spectra and Centerplate on a monthly basis, and they provide up-to-date updates on their goals and incentives.
Okay, great. Commissioner, I'm going to close this item out if we can, and then do you want to maybe bring it back on a quarterly basis?
I'm fine with that.
Okay. We'll do that and just get a quarterly update then. And we thank you so much for being here and your team, David.
It's a great partnership, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
We feel the same way. Thank you so much. Thank you. Great. Let's see. Who here is city staff that just has one item to be heard? Anyone? What item do you have? That's okay. Let's go ahead and do them. Come on up.
It's item number two.
Yes. Sorry.
So we'll call up item number two. Commissioner Areola, this is your item on mix. This is an update on the Class A office space. And just for the record, we're planning another meeting, a special meeting on we decided on the 19th, I think, if my colleagues are available. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that's the date we're working on. We're looking to keep everything on track.
Because if we have to go to referendum, we're going to need another meeting. So we're looking at potentially adding a meeting on the 19th, depending on my colleagues' schedules. Go ahead. Do you want to tee this off or just have
I mean, we all know what this is about, so I think we're just going to get a brief update. Is that correct? Yeah.
Let's just get a brief update.
Absolutely. Thank you for approving the extra meeting in April. We really appreciate that. So after authorization to negotiate, the city attorney's office and the administration have been aggressively negotiating both projects that were approved for negotiation. We meet with each team at least twice per week, and also we have internal meetings. So we're very dedicated and committed to getting this done, and we are providing every resource to do that. I just wanted to go over a few key terms that are pretty standard at this point amongst both negotiation tracks with both teams, and then I'm going to ask Rick from the city attorney's office to talk about some items that are still under review and being negotiated. So the term would be a 99-year lease with a 51-year term initially with two consecutive 24-year extensions. All city parking revenue, 100% of the net revenues, would come to the city, and that would be based on the replacement parking that is being developed. Financing for the project, we have some requirements that include loan-to-cost ratio and loan-to-value ratio not exceeding 90%. The developer would maintain at least 10% equity in the project. The city will not provide for any funding or financing of the project. The city's fee simple interest in the property would not be subordinate to any mortgage. And the city will have first priority right for any rent collected. There are various provisions for termination for clause by the developer, as well as the fact that the city may be able to terminate based on default by the developer. We have requested that the development teams produce preliminary analysis for parking, traffic, and infrastructure impacts as requested by the city commission. Each team has executed a reimbursement agreement, whereas up to $150,000 worth of the city's expenses toward negotiations, which could include outside counsel, appraisals, any reports or studies that need to be done, the development teams would be responsible for that. Each team has included various public benefits as indicated in the memorandum, and I'm going to turn over to Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Rick Dopico from the City Attorney's Office, Commissioners. There are a number of terms that we are still actively negotiating. Of course, when we get to the development agreement and the ground lease, we'll get into the minutia. But in terms of principal terms, there's going to be proposed amendments to the LDRs and to the comp plan to address the required parking for these projects, height, and residential use at one of the projects. We're still anticipating the construction timeline and milestones from one of the groups, and we're reviewing what has been provided from the other group. In terms of rent, the city expects to have its counterproposal to the two parties early next week. We have been working diligently with our consultants and internally to come up with a counterproposal that is fair and in the best interest of the city and its residents. There was in the memo a reference to the ballot question issue. One of the proposers has two different lots, and there will likely be two ground leases. Since the time that memorandum was issued, we have had further discussions with that proposer, and they have agreed that one ballot question would be more sensible and less confusing to voters. We've requested that each of the proposers refrain from disparaging or campaigning against each other, and both proposers have agreed. We're just currently tweaking the language of the provision that would apply. There is a pursuant to the commission's request that we look at the impact on traffic and parking as well as infrastructure. The two groups are preparing studies that are preliminary in nature, and those will be provided April 13th. So the next time we come before this committee, we will have an update on that. And then finally, the issue of whether the city will operate the parking component or require the developer to operate, that's something that is still currently under review. I imagine that we will keep that as an option in the agreements, and we've we've determined that we will be able to provide a decision after the referendum. So we're not tying ourselves up just yet, so we have plenty of time to decide that.
And I just want to add that TPC, one of the groups, they have provided an alternative financial proposal after their initial proposal in the RFP that would include an upfront payment and rent payment during construction. They've also provided an option that includes workforce housing, whereas 20% of the 43 units would be workforce at 140% of the area median income. So we're still talking through that to see where we land on the financial terms.
So one question is, there are two different opportunities here. Does it look like we still are on track to potentially have both opportunities before the voters, or what do you think? Do you think
at this time? I think we're on track with both projects. I think both teams have been keeping up with our pace, and I think that we could get there. We'll provide more details on April 19th, where we'll have the term sheets for each project. And then we're going to land use on April 8th, so there may be some impacts there that could, you know, trigger some potential changes in how each team looks at their project. But as of right now, I think we are on track to have both.
And did I hear you right to say that it looks like there will only be one referendum question for both projects, or there will be two questions, one for each project?
There would be a question for each project.
Okay. It's just that I misunderstood. You said there's two properties basically with one project, but you would consolidate and just have one question.
We were thinking, because of the fact that Integra Starwood's project incorporates P25 and P26 with developments on each, that we may have to do two separate ground leases, which may have triggered two separate ballot questions. But we've clarified that it's only going to be one ballot question.
And legal has looked at that, and you're comfortable with that?
Yes, and it's one proposal, one price proposal for both projects. So, and they're interrelated. You know, if you have one ballot question pass and not the other, that whole project doesn't work. So, that really lends itself to consolidation for that one item. And one, Mr. Chair, I know we spoke over the weekend about some media reporting that these projects were going to be 80 stories, and we just want to clarify that the maximum height here is less than 100 feet for each project.
Yeah, I don't know if my colleagues got emails from constituents and talk about sloppy reporting or right? I mean, 80 stories, and people were irate about it, and I was like, what, 80 stories? That's not what I remembered, right? And then, 80 feet. So, details matter. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I know we're working on an aggressive time frame. One thing that would be very helpful to me is sort of the next time we discuss, whether it's on the 19th or whenever, a real clear sort of executive summary comparing both projects. As my colleague rightfully said, one option is to do both, one option is to do neither, and the third option is to do one. So for me, I would very much like to be able to have a clear comparison of the two projects in case it is the will of the body to do one of the two. How do they stack up against each other? I said that on the record last time. I think that's very important. And I also am very pleased to hear the language as it relates to analysis on traffic, parking, infrastructure. The decision would be simple if there was no trade-offs and we could reap the benefits of economic development with no quality of life impact. That's not the real world. So the real world is how do we balance and trade that off. So I very much look forward to hearing more about that and look forward to the continued dialogue. Thank you.
Okay, I don't have anything else on this. We'll close out this item. And Raquel, you said you have another item?
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
I do. Item number 6.
Okay, item number 6. Commissioner Samuelin, this is
yeah,
your item.
Yeah, I'll tee this up. Thank you. Our CRA advisory, let me start with our CRA, is really going to do great things for North Beach. I'm thrilled what the administration did, thrilled that we got that moving. Our advisory committee is a very helpful sounding board. They made a motion, and they sent it to us saying that they thought a physical location would be helpful. I see that we have a recommendation to use building facilities. Just a question, Raquel, maybe you could just amplify sort of the punchline. Did we go back to the committee? Do they know that's what we're suggesting, and how do they react to that idea?
We did not go back to the committee to say that this was the definitive direction. We did mention that this could be an option a few months back, a couple meetings ago with the committee, as this motion was made, I think, in November of last year. So the committee at its last meeting did start to talk about what the parameters for the office could or should look like, and there wasn't any clear direction as to what they wanted to see in terms of square footage or location. So at this time, the administration thinks it's feasible and, you know, is recommending that we leverage the building department's lease of that North Beach facility and offer the North Beach CRA an opportunity to utilize that space. It would be for a few days per week, a couple hours per day. We would not want to have a dedicated CRA staff member at this point, as the CRA has not yet received any revenue, and so we just want to be conservative with the way that we expend resources, especially initially. We think that we could do the $187 per month at about $2,200 for the year. If and when the CRA grows, which we hope that it will, perhaps it may outgrow that space and probably utilize another larger space, or maybe even go in the 72nd Street complex or somewhere else in North Beach if that's the desire of the CRA board and City Commission.
I'm supportive of the administration's recommendation. One, I think we're responding to our committee. Two, we're leveraging existing assets. Three, you know, I tend to be a big believer in starting small and growing. I want to say crawl, walk, run. So this looks like that right type of path forward. So given that, I will move the administration's recommendation to leverage on a part-time basis the building facility.
So, you know, Raquel, I asked the administration, maybe I misunderstood. So I don't know that we've ever had an office, a CRA office, for the prior CRAs. So what is the purpose of having an office there? Because the decisions are going to be made here, right?
Well, I think ultimately the difference between the current RDA and the North Beach CRA is that right now the RDA is very limited in scope based on the several interlocal agreements and amendments to the interlocal agreement. I think with the North Beach CRA, there's much more of an opportunity to chart its course and to define the types of projects and initiatives that it will be able to accomplish and achieve. So yes, the administration and, you know, the city attorney's office, the city manager is the executive director of the CRA, and city attorney is the general counsel. So yes, all decisions will continue to be made by the same set of people. But I think in terms of providing assistance to small businesses or, you know, answering questions and being able to have that in-person connection with the community, I think that was the intent of the advisory committee's motion. I think they wanted to have that physical presence to feel like there was someone actually operating the CRA within the district.
But what would they do? So, I mean, the purpose of the CRA is to collect, to basically get a pot of money brought from the tax revenue, right, and then make decisions on how the money will be spent to improve the community. But I think any expenditure would have to be made by this body, I mean, by the full commission, right?
Absolutely, and we will be proposing a budget for the North Beach CRA and a work plan with activities. We'd like to see some quick wins. We'd like to plan for the short-term, midterm, and long-term. So there are going to be programs and initiatives that need to be developed and rolled out. So, you know, we can identify how, you know, funding should be allocated and make a recommendation to the CRA board for approval, but there will be folks who have to do that work and to make it happen.
Well, when you say programs,
For example, if there's a current recommendation from the advisory committee, it's a preliminary recommendation to do a facade improvement program for the Normandy Fountain area. If that were to be approved and, you know, need to be implemented, we would need to have someone dedicated working on that. And so perhaps that could happen out of the CRA office, in addition to fielding questions about how to open up a business, you know, identifying retail spaces that might be available for businesses who are looking to come into the area. We could have incentive programs. There are a number of things identified in the CRA redevelopment plan that the CRA is capable of doing and permitted to do. And so the staff resources and the financial resources need to come together to be able to achieve some of those goals.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
If I may. And I understand your line of questioning, Commissioner Richards. It doesn't look like there's a huge amount of daily work at this moment in time. My sense is what the committee was looking for was a physical outpost, a place where if there were issues, and a place that we could grow into. I just want to come back to the memo, if I'm reading this right. The proportionate share for rent and office space, approximately $187 a month and some utilities. Are we net-net on an annual basis talking about a few thousand bucks to do this?
Yes, we're looking at $2,200.
I think it's a nominal investment given the importance of the CRA, given the opportunity to have a physical presence, and also our advisory committee believes that this works. I think at that few thousand dollars per year and the administration recommendation,
How is it going to be staffed? Are we going to have to hire another person?
So my intent is to have an existing staff member dedicate some of their hours at that location until such time as we find a need to recommend any new hires for the CRA. I think we need to leverage the existing staff that we have.
Okay. Commissioner Ariola, do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, I would not favor, adding a new position. So long as there's no new headcount, then, you know, I'm open to exploring this. But if we're just going to hire a bunch of people and move them up there, I wouldn't support that.
I feel the same way. So because it sounds $2,000 can be nothing, and the next thing is you need another headcount, and now we're talking about $100,000. So I'm not going to support that. But if we want to have a small office up there and it's going to be $2,000, if that was in the form of a motion, I'll second that, and we'll send that back to the commission. Okay, let's close this.
I'm not sure that it would have to – would it have to go back to the commission, or could we just recommend it in the budget and then the commission could – approve there.
You could do both, but you would need to take it up as part of the annual budget.
Yeah, so process. Let's do that. Let's just make it a line item in the budget and allocate it there, and then it'll be part of the budget, and the commission will vote on it in that way. So, okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, there are some folks on item number 19. If
let's do it then.
To take that one.
Perfect. We'll call up item number 19. This is the three properties that the commission voted to invite people to give us invitations. So, Adrian, I think you're up. So go ahead. Let me turn it over to you guys, and I'll let you lead it off.
Good morning, Commission. Ozzy Dominguez, Division Director of Asset Management for the City of Miami Beach. In February of 2021, the city tasked the Facilities and Fleet Department with reviewing the assets that the city has and determining if there was any properties that were fit for disposition. This was then taken back to the Finance Committee on June 11th, and then in July of 28, the City Commission approved listing three of the properties for sale through CBRE. So we entered into an agreement with CBRE and listed those properties in November of 2021. We received three bids multiple bids for the three properties in February of 22. February 15th, CBRE then went back to all of the bidders and asked for the highest possible bid, which they returned on February 25th of 2022. The three properties are Pine Tree, Commerce, and 87th on North Beach. So we've attached all the bids that came in, and we've highlighted the three highest bids for each of the property. So at this time, the property in Pine Tree did go back to neighborhoods yesterday for discussion, as there was a request to consider that property to be considered for a park versus to be sold for residential project. So based on the foregoing, I recommend that the committee review the proposals and determine if we want to proceed as commission had recommended with the disposition of the three properties, or if we want to consider a different route for either of them.
Okay. Adrian.
And CBRE is here. No, we have some of the bidders are here present.
I see. Okay, great. Does the administration have any recommendation specific to any of the three properties? I mean, we had authorized you all to go out and invite people to give us an offer. So I wouldn't say we listed the property because we're not under any obligation to sell the properties, even to the highest bidder. We have invited people to give us an offer for consideration. So, colleagues, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I will. And I had the benefit of hearing my colleagues at Neighborhoods. So on the Pine Tree 63rd, what I recall, and it was just a handful of hours ago, was that that's been vacant for decades, that there are private vehicles actually using it. I don't know how that's exactly happening, but there's things happening that I don't believe the committee felt great about. I sense the committee thought do nothing was not a good alternative, came away with the investment in a park, including a seawall, to be in the 1.6 range, 1.6 million. So there's a flip from selling to having to invest. So that's sort of that one, and that is my recollection of what we heard yesterday. I'd like to know more about these others, if I could. 266 87th Street. Two basic questions. Number one, what has been there? What level of activity? And if we don't sell it, what would we do?
This property is located across from the former Surfside building, and half of that property was actually sold to the developer of the, can't remember the name of it.
87 Park.
Thank you very much. A few years ago. So the other half has been basically parking lot and just a vacant land.
And the parking lot, any sense of utilization? Are there how many spots? How active is it? I don't need all the details, but is there something?
I don't know if Monica knows any information on 87th Terrace. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
It is a small parking lot. I would say it's probably about 15, 20 spaces.
Yeah, I think it's about 15 spaces, and it basically is on the city, the border city line between Miami Beach and Surfside, and it may be utilized more by Surfside than Miami Beach in terms of, I mean, we would still have the revenue, right? So, and then there's a small vacant lot on the northwest corner, and the parking lot's on the northeast corner. So it's a, and then I guess there's a private developer that owns the south side of the city block. Monica, do you have any information about revenue for that lot? How much it generates is, we're going to put you on the spot, mm-hmm. and if you don't have the answer, you just say, I don't have the answer, because we didn't tee
I'm
you up.
I'm used to saying I don't have the answer. It comes naturally. Actually, I don't have the answer, but I could tell you this. We don't get a lot of revenue, because guess who parks there? People with disabled placards.
Oh, okay.
So not a significant revenue producer. And, you know, there's that building across the street that they were temporarily using it much for construction during the tower construction, but no, that's not a big revenue generator. We do enforce, but we find a lot of disabled parking.
When you say the disabled placards, we've had this conversation before. And I think what you're suggesting is we have an issue in the city with people using placards that are not obtained in a valid way. We're not condemning the use of any disabled placards being used for valid purposes, but I think we know that there are a lot of maybe valet services that are or others that have been able to obtain these placards when maybe they didn't qualify. So
that's correct.
What was the offer that we got on that piece of property, the parking lot and the
that one was 3.65. And the appraised value was 3.4.
Did I hear somebody say that the city sold the land on the south side to the developer? When was that done? Do we know?
That was in 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
And do we know how much we sold that for?
We do, back in the office.
Oh, okay.
I owe you that. And let me just correct. I'm sorry, I read you the Pine Tree numbers. For 87th Terrace, it's actually $4.6 million, and it appraised at $4.6
million. Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may, just the same exact question. What is the history of Commerce Jefferson? What's happening there today? And if we don't go to market and actually do a transaction, what would we do?
This is a very small area of grass area. There's been no development in that property throughout its history, and it sits right next to a real estate office. I know that they were a bidder on this. They're not the ones that were the highest bidder, but the concept that would need to go here, it can be used for commercial, but it would need to be for a very small concept, and the bidder's concept is actually a very small juice bar that they would like to put there.
Colleagues, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on these. I believe we have folks from the public I'd like to hear. For me, one of the things that's really important, I'm less inclined to want to do this and put money into a general bucket. That doesn't really interest me. If we said, for example, that we like the park idea on Pine Tree 63rd, if that was the will of the body, that needs money. If we said we have an outstanding obligation at the Collins Park cultural area that we need to fund with a deadline and we dedicated some of that, that makes sense. I'm always looking for a down payment on the Byron because we have zero. So for me, the conversation's a bit about the what's happening with the property today and what would we do with this money in a dedicated way. But I look forward to hearing from both of you and from the public as to next steps.
So good comments. And I have said publicly many times that I will never support the sale of any city asset to fund city operations because I think it's a horrible idea. I believe there are instances where it's appropriate to sell a city asset to obtain a new asset or to enhance an asset, so a capital project. So with respect to the Pine Tree property, I do not lean in favor of making it a park. You ask how people are using it. I think the word is they're trespassing. There is a sign posted on the property now and a trespassing sign, but people are using it for launching canoes and things like that or fishing. I don't know that, you know, it's a residential property, and for me, I'm not sure how the city ever got it, quite frankly, but I would like to see it back on the tax rolls so that we can generate tax revenue off of it. It's a residential property. There is a park across the street, so I'm not sure that this small space would be ideal for a park. So, and this particular property, I think, because it's waterfront, would have to go to referendum. So I, all three of these properties, and this is why the commission previously agreed to allow for invitations, that because we determined all three of these properties were properties that we would consider selling under the right conditions. I believe we should send this back, and I want to hear from Commissioner Areola. I believe we should send this back to the commission because we're going to need to have everybody on board. If you know, we'll have to have the votes if we want to sell these one or more or all these properties. I will be in favor of selling all three of these properties, but only if 100% of the money is put towards capital projects, either the Byron, which we're going to need some money on. You know, I'm working on something, and you're working on something, and the theater, I've got some other ideas on the black box on how we might be able to pay for that. But so I would only be willing to list these if 100% of the money would be used for capital projects. Commissioner Areola.
Yeah, I think the three of us are aligned. I'm not sure if Commissioner Samlin is in favor of all three or not. It wasn't clear. But, yeah, I would be in favor of selling all three. And like you, Commissioner Richardson, so long as, you know, we find the use for the money and that it would go to capital projects, which I think is what you're saying as well. Yeah.
Because we have we have a long list of items that we want to work on in the city in terms of capital projects, and we could use the funding. So if you all agree, then let's move it back to the commission.
Do we have people online or no?
We do not.
Oh, okay. I thought we did. So, colleagues, I like the idea of capital use. I particularly have energy around Collins Park because we need to fund that, and the Byron. I'm favorably inclined on the first two. The third one, Pine Tree 63rd, I think we do need to explore alternatives. I understand your perspective. You're not bullish on a park. I think do nothing is not the right alternative, but I agree with the motion that we would send it back to the full commission and that we would dedicate these funds for capital projects. And again, I just want to be clear, I'm favorably inclined on the first two. The last one, especially given yesterday's discussion with four of us there, I want to see what that alternative looks like. I also want to listen to the residents a bit in that Pine Tree, LaGorse area. But I think the idea, basically we're saying we have underutilized assets and we want to reinvest in higher and better purposes. That logic holds up for me.
Okay, so let's do that. Let's send all three back to the full commission for consideration, and with the recommendation that if any property is sold, 100% of the funds would be dedicated to for capital projects. Okay, John, you got it?
And Mr. Chair, if we could move that for the April 6th commission, we would need direction in terms of particularly with that Pine Tree property because it is subject to referendum and there are election deadlines depending on whether the item would be on the, if approved, would be on the August or the November ballot, and we would need to negotiate a purchase and sale agreement. So we would need the time.
So I'm okay, but I don't know if we have – I think the agenda is being printed as we speak, right? So
we could add it on as an addendum item for discussion.
All right. I think, colleagues, that's okay. Let's do that then. Let's show that as an addendum item and get it back to the commission for April 6th. And then it would be the will of the party of the body if they want to hear it or defer it at that point.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thanks. Okay. We have some – let's take one other item, and then we're going to get to I had item 10. This was an item that I picked up from Commissioner – who did I pick this up from? I think it was Commissioner Steinberg. So on solar facilities, we're going to make this very brief. So I think Commissioner Steinberg had put this on, right? And
yes.
Then you'll know that she asked me to pick it up, so go ahead.
Yes. Hi, I'm Yanni Pineda, Sustainability Manager. So this item was brought forth so we can look at the possibility of installing solar over at the Convention Center. However, over the last couple of years, the administration has focused on reducing energy instead in order to lower the cost of solar as well, if it's something that we want to explore in the future. I want to note that in the last, I want to say it was in February, the City Hall was actually recognized by the Miami-Dade County Building Energy Efficiency Program as actually being the municipal building that had the highest energy savings in comparison to other buildings that were within the program. We're also conducting an energy assessment. We've retained AECOM to help us with looking at all city facilities and the possibility of identifying areas where we can actually lower our energy costs. So at the end of this year, we're supposed to get about, I want to say it's 5 energy efficiency strategies and projects for the city to implement internally. Another thing we're looking at is in the last few years, we've also received something called a Soul Smart Goal designation. So what we do with that is we make it easier for properties to install solar by waiving fees and just making the process a lot easier for them. We did receive an estimate from a local company called Advanced Green Technology just to give us an idea of how much it would cost to be able to install solar over at the convention center. What they estimated it as, and this would include installing 2 solar arrays in the form of carports on the roof of the building, it's going to cost approximately $10 to $15 million, and we're looking at possibly $27,000 of savings per month. So right now we're averaging about $97,000 in electricity costs over at the convention center. If it's something that we're interested in, we would have to go through a competitive procurement process. And another option we have is the FPL has something called the Solar Together program, where properties can actually subscribe into getting their, residents can actually subscribe into getting their properties powered by solar farms that are managed by FPL. So there are a couple of different options that we can take on. The administration recommends continuing the energy assessment, which we'll have the results at the end of the year for. And if it's something that we want to move forward with, we can conduct a solar assessment where we can look at all city buildings and check to see, well, which ones can actually have solar installed within them, which ones are better off maybe looking into the Solar Together program for. And so that would actually have to go through the budget and procurement process if it's something that we're interested in.
So was there any specific project that Commissioner Steinberg was interested in when she had this item? And because I wasn't familiar with the history.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. I just know that there was a lot of interest in looking to see what we could do over at the convention center.
Okay. Well, colleagues, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I picked it up from Commissioner Steinberg, and I appreciate the city looking at this, and I think you'll continue to look for opportunities for us to save costs on our electric bills and so forth. So with that, John, I'm going to close it out unless you guys want anything else on this. And I'm particularly interested in new facilities where they can be designed more efficiently and so forth. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Colleagues, next we're going to take, we've got some folks here with a time certain on some school funding issues, so we're going to take item 12 first, is a request for matching funds for band uniforms. This wasn't my item. I see Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez has co-sponsored. This was a request for partial funding that I received several months ago, and I said I would be willing to support it if there were match opportunities. It's my understanding that the school board is willing to put in, I think, Leslie, you can, I think I was told board member Lucia Baez-Geller, $5,000 to $8,000 was the number she gave me. But let me let you speak on the item. Go ahead. Welcome.
Good morning. I think we're still in morning.
Yeah.
Leslie Rosenfeld, Chief Learning Officer. This is item 12, the matching funds for the marching band. So as many of you are aware, high schools, traditional high schools, have marching bands. Per conversation I had with the district, there are approximately 65 traditional high schools that would have marching bands. About half of them have marching bands that are currently up and functioning and performing. Miami Beach Senior High School has a history of having a marching band available. There's been movement at the school and with the difficulty in raising funds, some of the needs of the marching band have gone unmet. We do have members of the PTA with us today who I'm sure have some things they'd like to share. I'm not familiar with board member Lucia Baez-Geller's commitment. However, if she has indicated that, then I'm sure she will come forward with those funds. So the information that I received from the school was to seek a support for uniforms for the students. When our children are out performing within the community at the school, it's a matter of a pride in their performance. And if you've ever seen marching bands out and about, they have some nice looking uniforms that they use. And so the estimate that was provided to me, which is in the memo, was approximately $18,000 for the uniforms. And there was an additional request for support for perhaps some of the instrument purchase and repairs on an ongoing basis. I did have a conversation with staff from our procurement department. We may, depending upon the actual cost, want to take this to a formal bid process as opposed to not necessarily going that way if not required, just so we get the most bang for our buck if that's the direction we choose to go.
Okay. So first of all, before I forget it, I just want to recognize, I know Josh Levy is teaching a class at Nautilus today, and he's Mr. Pearson's class, that they're all watching how government works. So we want to say thanks for watching, and this is the way the sausage is made, as they say. So colleagues, I'd like to hear from the PTA, if we could first, and Melissa, come on up, and so...
We have Team Beach High.
Okay, perfect. I remember our conversation started, and we talked about some match opportunities. So,
Good morning. I'm Melissa Delisle, PTSA president at Beach High, and I have behind me my social media chair, Barbara, and then my quarterback on the football team, and our great coach, Terry, our football coach. So we sent you all a letter earlier in the week, and just outlining how important it is to have a band at our school. And that, yes, the main reason is pride. And it does touch on every single aspect of the school. We are just back from COVID, and we've had a year and a half of kids at home learning, and they are at a very high stress level at school. So something like this can reach out to, we're potentially wanting to reach a third of the school. So we have 2,400 kids. We would ideally like to have maybe 800 kids in band. Right now, we have a orchestra, jazz, and concert band classes. And there's about 150 kids comprised of those three classes. So, to get the band off the ground, they would need to. We need $44,000, and that comprises of uniforms. And I spoke to the band director, who couldn't be here today because he's teaching. But to order uniforms, which he's done in the past, he's been doing this for years. They suggest 80 uniforms at a time, and that would cost $32,000. Eventually, we hope to dress those 80 children. The first year, he's estimating 25 kids would join the marching band. So that's just to give you an idea of the initial cost. And then the other costs are drums, different types of drums here, which equate to about another $8,000. And then the stands that hold these big, huge drums, another $5,000. So that's the breakdown that you have in front of you. It's $44,000 to start. Lucia Baez-Geller did say she would give us that amount, and then our principal is going to donate $6,000 to $10,000. So we are asking for half.
So when we started the conversation and with Juliet, I told you guys I'm all about match, and
I know
participation, because I think everybody's got to have skin in the game, and I did the same thing at the state level, you know, in terms of, like, tell me what you're going to do and how I can help you get there. So, board member Baez-Geller told me $5,000 to $8,000. Is that the same number she gave you?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and originally we were talking about 40, but we're in the range of 45. So, colleagues, you know, and what I would like to see is, let's say that the school board will take at the low end the $5,000. $45,000, that leaves 20, and I would like the city to do a match on that, so that we would fund 20, and you guys have to come up with 20.
And we'll do that with fundraisers, like we always do.
Colleagues, how do you feel about that?
I'll support that. I think marching band is a wonderful amenity. I'm struck by the number of kids that might take advantage of it. That's a big number. So
yes,
it's a widespread program. While the school board obviously is the primary jurisdiction, we always are trying to enhance and elevate our schools. Beach High is our school, and I very much appreciate the match. So I will make the motion as you described it.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I will, so what we'll do is, go ahead.
I have one other request. So
you're,
I know.
You're getting ready to have a win. Well, you're getting ready to have a win.
Because we need to sustain the band every year. So that it requires hiring teachers, who percussion instructors, marching instructors, and an auxiliary flag instructor. and they usually get three-month contracts. We don't have that now, so we would need to hire these teachers to create the band. So we were asking you for an annual contribution
of, I think that,
to
that's
cover this cost.
That I don't want to cloud this, what we're doing today, with that. So we're going to have a separate discussion about that, and we'll do that. But let's have this win today, right? So
I'll take the win.
Take the win. So
thank you.
What we'll do is board member Geller committed 5 to 8. If she can come up with 8, then I have no objection to you taking that additional 3,000 between 5 and 8 and making it part of your 20. But
And our school, our principal is going to donate out of her principal's
and
fund.
And you can, yeah, that'll all come from your side. So, John, do you have what you need from us? Okay, this item's closed.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And it's going to bring so much pride to our school, and we just want to see Beach High elevated like all the other schools in the city in this respect. So thank you.
We look forward to seeing the band marching with the new uniforms.
Oh, we'll be there.
Perfect. Okay, we're going to take up item 13, which is also a request for a PTSA request for $25,000. This was a request from the mayor. So Leslie,
get up here.
Go ahead. I'm not familiar with this item, so go ahead.
Absolutely. So the city of Miami Beach had historically supported several years ago the installation of artificial turf on the Miami Beach Senior High School field. That was a partnership between the city, the NFL, and the Miami Dolphins, and the school board. At the time, the city committed $350,000. And if you've not had an opportunity to drive by the high school and specifically look at the artificial turf field, it really is beautiful. It was done very well and very quickly. So we're very fortunate. And that was done within the time frame that that we all had been promised, which was light speed. And so at this point, there is a scoreboard. Or it was removed, right?
The scoreboard was removed because it was a safety hazard. It has not been in use since I've been there. For 6 years I've been there.
Right. So it was recently removed, and so the field was without a scoreboard, which if you participate in games could make it a bit challenging
to follow.
Understand where what's happening. And so there is a request from the Miami Beach Senior High School PTA to match funds that have been committed by the NFL Foundation, who will provide a matching fund of $25,000 if there is a partner out there to fill the remainder of the anticipated cost of $50,000 for the scoreboard.
So the sign's roughly $50,000, and you've got a match opportunity of $25,000, and you need $25,000 from the city. I don't have any objection if one of my colleagues wants to move the item, or how do you feel about it?
And I would also like to add that the mayor had requested the name on the scoreboard historically had been Stephen Ross because he was the original funder. So the city's logo would also be on the scoreboard as well because we are a partner for the scoreboard.
Well, if we're going to have a football field, we need a scoreboard. So,
yes.
You know, this is not that complicated. I am just slightly curious. Does the school board help with facilities like this? They're a pretty major jurisdiction, and I'm wondering, in other municipalities, do they have school boards? Have they provided any funding to this?
I asked Dr. Bonsai, our regional superintendent, and he said no, they don't fund scoreboards.
No scoreboards.
At his previous schools, they have booster clubs raising money.
It is so outrageous.
It doesn't make any sense either.
They have a $1.9 billion budget, something like that. And I mean, it's a travesty. I'm at a loss for words because it.
And a lot of other districts fund marching band.
Yeah.
They give a portion. Other states, the band director was telling me.
Yeah, Commissioner, I have the same reaction. We need a school board. We need to have a scoreboard, and we need the school board. Have we talked to the school board, our representative, a board member?
Lucia Baez?
Yeah, can she help? I feel like—
Have not.
No? I just, if I could, I want to do this. We need to get the darn scoreboard up there. I feel like, though, in the spirit of partnership, it would feel a lot better if the school board was helping in some way, because this won't be the last request, and I want to do this, and we will do this, but I just feel like we should at least see if they could be part of the equation.
Yeah, so I agree that we should see if they'll be a partner. Just like with the band uniforms, I personally called board member Geller and asked her, and she called me back within 2 weeks. So let's do this then. Let's defer this item, and in the meantime, this is the mayor's item. I'm going to let's send him direction if he wants to reach out to board member. Out of respect, it's his item, and find out if there is any funding at all. Part of the problem, and I know this from my days in Tallahassee, is that while they have a huge budget, there are a lot of buckets that the state puts on them in terms of where the money can be spent, and there is not a lot of money for these types of expenses for extracurricular activities. That's, you know, the category that I would put it, whether it's band or it's sports and so forth. So while they have a big bucket of money, they have a lot of little buckets, and there's just not a lot of money for these types of things. So I think we all want to get this done, but I think we have a responsibility to the community to find out what, if anything, the school board could do. So let's bring, I don't want to delay this, John, we're going to meet on the 19th, so let's put it on, we're in a special meeting on the 19th, let's put it on the agenda for the 19th, we'll bring it back, and we will we'll get that answer first, and if they tell us they can't, then I have a feeling there still will be the will of the body to help here, but I think we have a fiduciary responsibility to ask the question.
Okay, thank you. I understand.
Perfect.
Okay.
I just say for the record, you know, the coach is here and your quarterback's here. I fully support this too.
Team so Lawrence.
We'll make it happen. We'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
We will.
But what we don't want is someone. I assume that somebody had already talked to the school board about this, and so I don't want someone to ask me why we didn't at least ask them to participate. Right. So let's ask the question. We will bring it back. We're having a special meeting, so it's really for only one purpose, but now it's going to be for two purposes so that we can keep it moving, and we'll talk about it again on the 19th, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I assume that if we're going to have a scoreboard, you guys are going to score, right? I mean, if it's just going to be zero, right, I mean, I could probably help you with that. So make sure you score.
It's their first winning season this year.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. All right, we're going to – we have item –
they have school spirit – and everyone at Beach High behind them, they'll be more motivated to score and to win. So.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Item 14 is mine. This was just something the QEC asked a school liaison officer. I don't know that we need to have a lot of conversation on this. There was some confusion about whether or not there was a resource officer for a time. The police department provided resources because the school board did not have the assets to do that. They have now since hired people. In my conversations with the chief, he told me that now, so there are resource officers in these schools now. Is that correct?
Good morning. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, Assistant Chief Paul Acosta for the Police Department. Yes, Chief. Yes, Commissioner, we have three school liaison officers that are currently assigned to all seven schools.
Okay, so what the chief said to me is he just doesn't have the resources to put more resources in right now, and he said he's not saying no, he's saying down the road if he gets all of his slots filled and he can provide more resources, that he's willing to do that. So with this item, I'm going to defer it, and we're going to give a few months for the police to see if they are going to have additional resources, and at that time we'll bring it back as appropriate. But I want to make it very clear that there are resource officers in all of our schools today, right?
So we have seven assigned by Miami-Dade School Police, and then we have three of our own Miami Beach personnel in the schools.
So we actually have more assets than we did a year ago.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. So with that, we're going to defer this, and John, we will keep it deferred for a couple of months until we see if we need to bring it back. So with that, this item is now closed. Okay,
Colleagues, if you don't have anything else, I'm going to... Anyone else here from the city that just has one item? Okay, come on up. What item do you have? Yes.
Item 18.
18.
Yes.
Okay. And this is Commissioner Fernandez and mine. Regarding license application process, go ahead.
Don, you presenting? Okay. Manny Marquez, Assistant Director of Finance. Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, Committee Member. The city has 7,000 BTRs in our 7 to 8 square miles. That's almost 1,000 BTRs per square mile. Of those 7,000 BTRs, 70 of them are for charter boats. There are 70 charter boats in the city and 147 total vessels. And that number has increased dramatically over the last 5 years. It's an increase of 500%. And the fees we charge for the charter boats, they're small. It's $114 per boat, and then we also charge a boat docking fee of $89. So the revenues we generate from this are not very much. They're approximately $25,000. In order to get a charter boat BTR in the city, the process, regulatory processes, the docking location goes and obtains a certificate of use from planning and zoning. The insurance is reviewed by risk management. Insurance for a party boat, it's $5 million insurance per occurrence and an aggregate insurance of $10 million. And also the applicant goes before the Marine Authority Advisory Review Board, and they're an advisory board, and they approve or negate the application. That's the current process, and it seems that just about anybody that goes in front of the board, if they all their T's are crossed and all their I's are dotted, they're approved. One thing...
What board is this again? This is
Marine Authority Advisory Review.
Community Board. So what they told me, because several months ago, a couple of members of the board called me and said, basically everything gets approved if they have. And I guess I asked legal about that, and legally they have no option but to approve it. That's what I was told. So I'm not even understanding why they have to go before the board. It's some members of the board saying it's taking up basically all of their time, and then everything gets approved because it has to be. So
they have been very busy this year because code has been issuing a lot of violations. I think, if I remember correctly, code, you issued 500 violations?
Hi, Tom Curator, Assistant Director of Co-Compliance. Yeah, and the marina alone, the Miami Beach Marina, since January 2021 till March, we issued 544 violations down there. Half of them were actually 276 for business tax receipts. That's why now it's so crowded the board, because we caught them. The Indian Creek Waterway, we issued about 45 violations since January of last year. So that's the reason why the board is very crowded, because we caught them, they need to get a business tax receipt, they take up the time of the board, and that's really the whole.
So I Commissioner Fernandez isn't here, so I don't know exactly what perspective he had on this, but maybe the question is, are our waterways too crowded? If so, is there any way to limit the number of charters, or is that governed by state law?
If I may add, Mr. Chair, there's also boats coming from the mainland. A lot of charter boats come from Bayside. I recently had family members visit from out of town, and they took a boat from Bayside, and it went around. It was a speedboat, and it went around the city of Miami Beach looking at famous people's houses. So in addition to these 70 companies, there's also charter boats companies from the mainland coming. Commissioner.
I think that's the right question, Mr. Chair, about do we have too many? And then related to that, do we have misbehaving going on? So, you know, there's the initial BTR, but this is an annual process, right?
Correct.
And we're having discussions about our BTR process. So I agree with your comment. It shouldn't go to a committee if the only decision is yes. And then in the spirit of your comment, do we want to sort of contain the number a little bit? I wonder what the thresholds are, or maybe we should have thresholds of code violations at which you don't get another BTR.
Well, what is also, Commissioner, we gave 268 violations out of the 544 for doing business on city property. So not only the BTR, they got violations for doing business on city property by docking here.
So what is the law on, you mentioned the speedboat that comes from Bayside. So if they're licensed, I assume, in the city of Miami, are they, as long as they don't dock, they can use the water, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and they don't need a BTR for that because they're not docking. But you're saying if they are docking and doing business here, then they would have to have a BTR. Yeah,
as soon as they touch Miami Beach, they need a BTR when they dock here. But if they're just going up and down the waterway, that's why the 63rd Street Bridge, because they're not docking here, they're just going up and down the waterway. And that's right. The balance.
So maybe a legal question. Is there any way to regulate the number of charters operating on the waterway?
To put it another way, and I think this came up recently, can we impose caps on the number of BTRs that are issued? And we don't think that we can. If this is prescribed by Florida law, and we're entitled to charge a fee, there's a formula in the statute for the fee. There are very limited conditions that we could impose. We can look at it, increasing penalties for failure to have a BTR for folks that are not going through the process properly. And that's something that we're researching further and came up last night at the Public Safety and Neighborhood Quality of Life Committee. We could also look at docking regulations, and there was a referral, or I think Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez brought an item, a discussion item last month, and we're going to be working with her on an ordinance for just broader regulations of boating activity to the extent that we can. But using the BTR as the mechanism for doing that, we're much more limited in terms of what we could do there.
And another issue we have also, the BTR, the first violation is a $1,000 fine. The second violation is $500. So that
interesting. Colleagues?
So I like the discussion here about, looking at the failure to have a BTR, looking more broadly at our docking regulations, and Tom, you took the words out of my mouth, looking at the penalties that, sounds like we might need to look to stiffen our penalties. So I would be of the mind to let the administration digest a little what we said, collaborate with legal, and come back at the next meeting with some tangible recommendations.
One thing I would add to is maybe invite some of these charter captains or the companies to come in and advise us how we might be able to do a better job. Because, a lot of these are legitimate businesses. Tourists come in, they want to jump on a boat and go fishing or whatever. So we don't want to, obviously, be overly restrictive, but we want to make sure that people that are using our marinas, have all the proper licenses to run a business on our property.
Okay, so let's do this. John, let's bring this back in May, and then that'll give the administration some time to work on that and bring any recommendations regarding fines and penalties. And also, I'd like you to look at whether or not these things need to go to this citizen committee, but it's just chewing up a lot of their time, and it may just be that it's a legal review, and if they have all their paperwork in order, we don't need to do that, or it can be a perfunctory motion, as a group with this committee if they need to do that. So, and then with respect to the fines, it is wacky that the second fine is lower than the first, so we should definitely look at
that. Another issue we have to with the liaison, code the liaison to the Marine and Waterfront Board, and if we don't bring it to them, they like to see it, so that's another thing. They like to see all these, because when we don't bring something to them, they actually, their advisory committee, they call us and say,
Well, I've actually had some members of that committee tell me that they think it's a waste of time and it's taken up too much of the committee's time, and they basically rubber stamp everything because they're legally apparently required to. So with that, we're going to close the item, colleagues, and we're going to, you guys have enough of what you need to come back to us and talk to us in May, and then we'll see where we go if we want to make a recommendation and send it to the commission. Thank you. Who else is here? Come on up. What item do you have, sir?
Number four.
Discuss the beachwalk cleaning. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Yeah, good. Still morning, right?
Still morning. Yeah. Rodney Knowles, Assistant Director for the Public Works Department. We looked at the scheduling for the beachwalk, the sanitation team. And right now we have 18 employees working 7 days a week on the beach walk. We have 8 in South Beach, 4 in Mid Beach, and 6 in North Beach. And looking at it, we are pretty satisfied with the level of service that they're providing. However, we'd like to keep analyzing that to see if there's some hot spots, things popping up that we're missing. In the meanwhile, we've been installing additional doggy bag dispensers, et cetera, to help people collect dog waste, et cetera, to keep the beach wall clean in the meanwhile.
So you have 18 full-time people just dedicated to the beach walk?
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot of resources. Okay, so have this item was brought by Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez. I assume you've been coordinating with her office to let them know what you're doing?
We've been communicating with them. The item was referred to neighborhoods, but it was withdrawn yesterday, so we didn't get a chance to discuss it.
Okay, so, and you want to continue monitoring to see if there are hot spots and so forth, right?
That's correct.
So, John, maybe my suggestion, colleagues, that we allow the sanitation department to take a look at it over the next couple of months and see if they think that any changes need to be made to our annual budget, and in which case John could work it into the annual budget if changes need to be made. I don't
Agreed.
Know. Is that okay? All right, with that, we're going to close this item. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take number one. This is your GeoBond, the arts and culture. Let's have that discussion item. Who's going to talk to us about that? Hi. I'm going to try to get you guys out of here so you can go back to work. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Do you want to tee this up, or do you want to let staff just
go? There's not much to tee up. I think you're what are you going to do? You're going to give us just an update of where we're at? Or?
So we met with a lot of the commissioners, as discussed, and we tapered this down to a little bit to north of $134 million is where we are right now. This would be a fiscal impact, should we proceed with this, to homeowners about $108 a year. I've also revised the list to separate those items that are deferred maintenance versus the enhancements that were requested by the facilities.
That's one of the things that when we met, I asked them to look at is what is truly an enhancement versus a maintenance item on a city asset. So,
Mr. Chair, just add some background while Elizabeth hands off some of those documents. We met with some of the cultural institutions that you see before you in the packet, and we discussed how to bring this facility or this asset to a world class. And this was in line with Commissioner Arriola's sponsorship of this item: is how do we elevate these facilities to, to change the narrative or to change the game, if you will. So we did a comprehensive amount of work on this, and we've been having discussions on it. So what you see there is not only the like-to-haves but the have-to-haves from a facility perspective. So we carry about $30 million roughly deferred maintenance citywide. Half of that is the cultural facilities that you see. And even if you were to give me the $30 million today, it would take me some time to get through it. But we're comfortable with the numbers that you see there, and we'll continue to churn this list. So this list will be revised, as we continue to work through some of the numbers, increased construction costs, et cetera.
interesting point there. Let me ask you about that. So you're saying that independent of what we might do with the cultural bonds, for the city-owned facilities, you're saying that right now we have about $30 million of deferred maintenance on those, so we'd be on the hook for that anyway. We'd have to take that out of our capital budget, in future years. If we took care of it in the GEO bond, presumably we wouldn't have to do that for a while in our annual budget.
That is correct, sir. So to give you some background, for example, the GEO bond program for us, this facilities department, was incredibly successful in getting some of our buildings back to life. So our police station, which is 40 years old, is going to get renovated completely. We've heard of stories of Fire Station 1, which is in complete disrepair. But the Fillmore, the Jackie Gleason building that you see across the street, we were able to put a brand new roof on it. That's $2 million. If we were to go to the normal budget process, it would probably eat up all of the capital money available, and we wouldn't be able to get anything done. So we were able to pump in, at least our department, about $15 million from the GEO bond to bringing facilities back to life.
This is similar concept, except this would be catered to just the arts and culture facilities, which need it anyway. So some of the stuff we need anyway, you're talking new roofs, we're talking new lighting system, domestic water systems, things that are not sexy in the real world, but things that are necessary just to keep the building certified and available to the public.
So of the roughly $30 million in deferred maintenance we have right now, what would be the, if we didn't go this separate route and we just did it through capital projects on our capital city budget, how would that be spread out over time? Would that be like $5 million a year over 6 years, or what's a rough order?
And I don't want to speak for John, but from our perspective, how we typically do this is obviously different types of buckets of funds available. So our department taps into quality of life money, PAYGO money, capital renewal and replacement has its own millage. Gives us a very small amount to work with. They have been incredible, and this commission has been incredible at giving us the funds that we need to stay active. So perspective, we probably churn about 60 to 80 projects a year, from fire alarm replacements to, roofs to new generators, right? In short, difficult to say the actual number. I would have to go and ask him. Yeah.
John, here's the question is, to Commissioner Ariola's point, we're going to pay this anyway. So if we had a separate bond, then I'm looking for roughly how much money would free up. Since we have other capital interests and priorities, that's where the question is coming from.
It'd be about $2 to $3 million a year.
$2 to $3 million a year in additional. So that's roughly $2 to $3 million a year gets funded right now on maintenance on these cultural assets, is what you're saying.
Approximately.
About.
So it would help free up some more maintenance dollars for other assets.
On other assets.
Right.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And were you able, I don't know if I'm tracking the, were you able to look at the question that I had when we met about what's a true incentive versus a maintenance, or are you still working on that?
So we did separate those by columns. So you'll find on the rightmost column, that's going to be all the deferred maintenance items. It sums up to about $16 million and everything
so
else.
So help me, walk me through that so that I'm looking at this piece of paper right here. So on projected cost of proposed GO bond, no. So proposed enhancement. So all of these items for example, the first one would be the Bass Museum, right? Proposed enhancement.
Correct. So these are the requests from the operators. And then on the rightmost side is what we have identified from our facilities conditions assessments as deferred maintenance that has to be addressed.
So starting with the exhaust system, the 12,000, those are all things that we believe that we would take out of our regular capital budget,
correct.
But
correct.
For the possibility of this. So I see. Okay. Commissioner Ariola, what would you like to do with this?
Look, I think this is important for our city. It's important to some of us here on the commission, hopefully all of us. But I would propose send this to the full commission for further vetting, because this is obviously a really big decision. And if we want to try to get it done this year, working backwards off the calendar, we would have to draft the ballot language and then have it ready
pretty soon, right?
By May for the August election, and by July for November.
Okay, so the sooner we make a decision, the better.
Right. So, and I'm fully supportive of this. My only concern is I'm not sure that the timing is right for it, given that we had the other GO bond recent, what was that, in 2018, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Okay, Commissioner.
Thank you. And I appreciate where this is coming from. Arts and culture is an important element of who we are. I think the 2018 GO bond was a huge success. I think the administration and all involved should be congratulated for the communication, the planning, the execution. Always there's slight opportunities for improvement, but all in all, that has been a big win. My message on this is probably going to be fairly consistent. I don't doubt that we could use more money in arts and culture. That sounds reasonable to me. But I also think of some must-dos that I have a feeling need money too. Examples, street lighting. I hear about Lakeview. We heard about Drexel. I hear in the entertainment district. I really want to know, and I know we're going to talk about item 11 here soon about capital plan. What does it cost to light the city up in the way for public safety? Resiliency. We have a West Avenue project. It's largely funded. I have a feeling we're going to get requests for more. We have a South of Fifth project. That's funded. Let's be clear. There's no more money. We're done. We don't have any money. So we need money. There are other examples. And so for me, I need to see the holistic picture. I got to be honest. I need to see that those must-dos are going to be addressed before I can go to things that add to sort of the flavor of arts and culture. It's not to say these are not good ideas. So for me, I'm looking forward, whatever this body wants to do, I obviously respect that. But I'm looking forward to the budget retreat on May 20th where we're going to see these numbers. And then I could put this ask in that context. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. So Commissioner Ariola, I think you've moved that we'll send this back to the commission for the full consideration, and I'll second that, and I think we're in agreement to send it all for a discussion, and then we can decide how we, if we want to do this and how, what it would be. I mean, I'm in full agreement that we have other needs in the city. I don't think that mixing different topics in one GO would necessarily be the best way to do it, because I think the voters should be able to decide if they want to spend this on cultural. I think we could have a separate one on resiliency, and maybe that one, quite frankly, would take the priority over the cultural. But with that, we're going to close this item, and we're going to send it back to the commission. Do we need to try to get this on the April 4th, or will we have enough time if we get this on the May meeting?
It depends on you know, if the will of the body is to go in August, then we would really need that discussion to happen.
I think that we go, it'd probably be in November, so let's just send it for the May meeting. Okay. Is that okay with you, Commissioner?
Yeah.
Okay. No. All right, we'll do that. We'll send it.
For the May meeting, well, I mean, our meeting's next week, right?
Our meeting's next week. We're printing the agenda in the next
My concern
30
minutes. Is that it's a lot of information, and we've looked at it a lot more than the other four colleagues, and it may not be enough time for them to digest it all.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay. Yeah. We still have time.
We do, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. We'll take item number 3 on Española Way.
Just a point of information, Mr. Sure. Chair. I believe there was a request to defer item 3 on Española Way. I think that came forward. I, as the sponsor, am happy to see additional outreach. When did you think we should bring it back, Josiel?
We're ready to come next month. We're actually starting to coordinate the outreach for beginning of middle of next month.
Yeah, so there's progress being made. Work is continuing. I think this is going in a good direction. I want to see it sooner rather than later, but I believe there had been a request from the body to defer to May, which I am
open to do. Okay, it's defer till May.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. Okay, let's take item number 5. Discussion regarding trial of technology performance and strategy for the city of Miami Beach.
Who's got this one?
Hi.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Frank Quintana, Chief Information Officer for the city. I'm returning today a little ahead of our predetermined follow-up in July to give an update on some developments on the Tyler front with some of the ERP systems that we've been working on. As a brief overview, when we say Tyler, we're talking about three distinct things. We're talking about Munis, which handles the finance and HR portion of what the city does, EnterGov, which does the permitting, and New World, which does the public safety and 911 dispatch. This discussion is specific to the EnterGov portion. When we last spoke in October, our intent was to be able to baseline and determine whether the suite of products that we had were the appropriate for our organization, whether we were getting our best bang for our buck, et cetera, et cetera. At the time, we were in the middle of a 9-month strategic plan with Tyler to implement the latest versions of all of the ERP systems to their recommendations using best practices, new infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. On February 28th, we went live with a new version of EnterGov. That did not go as well as we had anticipated with them. The go-live date happened after multiple delays on their part on behalf of their deployment team, which are technical things that can happen from time to time. But where I think the our team definitely and many of the affected departments took exception was there were several outages for the following 3 to 4 weeks after that, which really kind of exceeded any reasonable amount of time that you should have recurring issues after moving forward with a recommended product. What compounded that issue is that Tyler really seemed to have an inability to support the system that they had put in place, which strictly from a technology standpoint is not the way you want to operate. And there doesn't seem to be consistency from one version to the other. So if we're in version A today, the things that worked in version A should work in version B. If you added something new, you can understand if you have issues. That was after a comprehensive training plan and testing plan that we had put together with building, code, planning, and all of the other lines of business here at the city that tested them. But unfortunately, despite the administration's best efforts to make sure that this went well, it adversely affected many citizen services and the CSS page that I know that you are all familiar with, which is the primary kind of interaction with citizens. So, again, from a technical perspective, we feel that this is kind of an unsustainable place for us to be in, specific to InterGov. So what we are ready to recommend is that the city go out and produce an RFI to test the market and see what other options are potentially out there that may not have been available when we went live initially. That notwithstanding, we are prepared to continue to maintain this. Even if we were to go off and change products, we're several years out from that. I think everyone has that understanding. But I think that it is in the best interest of the city to determine whether there is something functionally out there that can give us, you know, to fulfill our needs. Without saying, I mean, we've escalated this to the highest levels made available to us with Tyler. We've looked at contractual ramifications, and we've discussed that with legal and procurement. But we are at a point now that as we continue to navigate this, we feel that we should see what else is out there today.
Anna, can you come up, please? So thank you so much. We definitely have an issue that we need to address in the city because it's a concern. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you of the opinion that we need to look at other options?
Yes.
I'm in total support of that as well. Colleagues, how do you feel?
I'm supportive of that as well. I just had one question.
Please.
Can you talk about which departments are impacted? I see building, planning, and fire. Is that the scope, or are there other departments?
Building, planning, code, and fire are our four biggest, you know, internal customers. There are a total of 17 departments or divisions within the city that use them. Tourism uses them. Urban forestry uses them. But there are smaller components. Building, by far, is our largest user. It's just like finance is our largest user of munis. So it is affecting, you know, half the city departments. It's impactful.
Yeah.
And it's hard to determine whether or not this works or not if it's not stable. And that's, again, from a technical perspective where we take exception to that because I can't come here and tell you this is as good as it gets, right? That being said, one of the things that we've discussed internally within the departments is even if we do an RFI, we may come back and realize, you know what, this is a niche market. It does the best that it is. This is kind of what's available to us. That's a totally different discussion at that point. But without knowing, I think the consensus is, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And that's really what
don't we know what other cities are doing and why they're maybe have greater successes than we do in terms of just processing permits? You know, there's got to be out there in the industry a preferred vendor or...
Actually, I took a poll probably like 3 months ago of all the building officials to see which software they were using and whether they were happy. And I pretty much got a lot of meh from everyone. Mm. So it's not like I put the poll out there to all the local building officials and I got something back where I thought, oh, wow, this person's thrilled. Let me look at it. I know Coral Gables is really excited about their new program. They're getting Tyler. I know that Doral has been struggling. They're using Tyler. So it's like City of Miami, I know who they have. I talked to the county because somebody told me that the county had done something new, but the county's still using that dinosaur that they have that's from the 70s, and they just keep patching it, and so it's not like it's something that we can go and go, all right, let's go for it. So I have been looking around to see locally what's happening, and also stretching and looking on other building departments' websites, like Chicago, just yeah, randomly picking cities and looking to see what type of software they're on to see what's working.
I got it. Okay, so you'd like the committee then to send this back to you want to do an RFI, right? And you want to send that to the commission for approval and
so our RFIs, we've spoken to procurement, RFIs do not need commission approval to go out.
Okay.
So the intent was to do an RFI, come back with findings to, you know, inform the group what it is that we have found, what the results were, and then also keep you abreast of any developments on the MUNIS side, just to keep the discussion going if that's...
How soon can you get the RFI out soon?
So, frankly, we've been buried in trying to make sure that this continues to run for the past couple of weeks. Today is day six of not having a major incident, which, I mean, is not remarkable by any means. Okay. But it's, you know, we're trying to at least get to a week where we can say, okay, we're probably in a better place, which is unfortunate. So now that things seem to have tapered off to a degree, we're going to reassign some staff to work on some of the content for the RFI. Obviously, maintaining operations is, you know, our priority. I hope to have at least an RFI, you know, drafted and ready to go in the next few weeks, ideally, barring any unforeseen surprises.
Okay. Well, I think you don't necessarily need anything from us, but I think we're supportive of it, colleagues. Yep. So we definitely need to make some improvements in our process. So with that, John.
Frank, do you think we're going to hit the budget cycle if you do want to go in a different direction, or is this probably something more for next year's budget?
I think realistically this is something for next year. Just, you know, this is a major production system. This isn't the sort of thing you can draft an RFP and get responses, despite, you know, even if everyone makes this a priority, this is a really complicated thing to put together.
Okay,
so.
Very good. Thanks for the update. We'll look forward to seeing it when it comes back here after you get some responses, okay?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for your work and having the courage to say these things. So thanks.
Thank you.
John, how much did we spend on this? Roughly.
You guys remember?
It was part of the memo last time, so I'm sorry I didn't cover that again. The total spend for Tyler's been about 11 or 12 million for 6 years, but that's all encompassing of all three systems. So it's a little, it could be skewed a little bit, but I'd be happy to share the breakdown with your office.
But it was a little rhetorical. That's what I thought.
Okay.
But just real quick, it might be instructive. How much money are we talking about for a new system? $5 to $10 million, or like, can you give some kind of idea?
I think honestly, that would be a little premature at this time. At the time, based on the research that I did, kind of backtracking on how we got to the InterGov portion specifically, we did net some savings because we were doing MUNIS and InterGov. So obviously, there was kind of bundle pricing on there, and they were more on the lower end of the pricing scale. So I think the RFI and getting some general ranges of spend would probably answer that a little better.
I think my point is that it's a major expense.
Yeah. Yes. It will be a major expense if that's the direct question. I just don't have the numbers available.
Okay, we're going to close this item. Let's take item 15. Proposed parking garage mixed-use office. Commissioner Ariola, this is your item. We'll let you tee it up.
Tee this up. So this came to me, and I think it's an interesting opportunity that we could listen to. I think there might be a presentation. You know, if you want to give us some history, we tried this a couple of years ago to see whether there was any interest. We got no responses, but now there's at least one party that wants to bring us an idea for.
I'm sorry. there's at least one party who is. Wants to bring us an idea for our consideration. I think they're here today, so we should probably hear from them. Or do you want to tee this up first?
Okay. Basically, I just wanted to give a little bit of background.
Please.
So the current parking lot holds about 60 spaces. It's about a 21,000 square feet parking lot. There is still a need very much for additional parking in the area, and Location Ventures did provide us an unsolicited proposal where they would redevelop the area with about 8,000 square feet of ground space and also retail space, and add 169 spaces of parking. We'll take it off of them.
So let me just ask, though, before we get started, because, and I only got a briefing yesterday, and that is not Mr. Larkin's fault. That is my fault because my schedule was so tight. But was there a request by the administration? Like, where did this come from? Or is this an unsolicited?
This was an unsolicited bid.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Larkin.
Ozzie, did you want to add anything? Well, I will add a couple of comments to that, so thank you very much. So LV is proposing a 99-year lease, and they did put together a pro forma that we would need to review a little bit further. But in their pro forma, they will be collecting 100% of all revenues for the first 10 years, plus a 10% internal rate of return. But they also provided a great design for this building. We connected with Monica in parking to determine if there was a need for additional parking, what were the conditions in this area. Her department did confirm that the two garages that are close by within a block of this particular parking lot do get full. This parking lot is very small. It's only 60 spaces. It gets full. So there is a need for additional parking spaces and amenities and to bring life to this particular area. So with that, I'll hand it over.
Great. Thank you very much, sure. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, staff. PJ, could you pull up the presentation, please? Thank you. Next slide. Great. So, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, I think this represents an exciting opportunity for you all. The subject site is right in the middle of the entertainment district. The project that we're proposing is innovative. It diversifies the uses that are there. Right now it's just a surface parking lot. It'll serve residents and businesses. Our timing is fast-paced. We're going to move quickly if selected, and financing at no cost to the city. And you all will retain the asset once we're paid back our investment, and you get at least quadruple the revenue that you have now. But more importantly, something that I've been thinking about as I wanted to present this all to you is you all have been saying for over a year now you want to rebrand the entertainment district to the Arts and Culture District. That's fine, and labels do matter. I grew up in Miami. I know in Miami, See It Like a Native campaign took off in 1979. It created a firestorm of controversy, and it became so well known. So words matter, phrases matter, that's an important start. What Commissioner Areola is proposing, the GEO bond for arts and culture, is another substantive step in the right direction. That could induce, you know, museum powerhouses like the Whitney or MoMA to come down. It seemed far-fetched 2 or 3 years ago, but they want to be near the money. And the money is here now. The hedge fund owners and other entrepreneurs, I talk to them really every day now, setting up shop not only with their single-family homes but their businesses in Miami Beach. So that's very real. We're offering a smaller building block. We're offering to redevelop this parking lot, but the uses that we're offering, the Class A office use above, much better quality retail on the ground floor and restaurant uses. We think you can build upon these smaller building blocks in order to diversify the district, and that we think that is in the best interest of the city, and that is a standard that you all must satisfy in order to determine whether to accept unsolicited bid. Is it in the best interest of the city? So next slide, please. I don't have my glasses on, but I think that's right. So if you all do accept us as an unsolicited bid, what happens is that you all will then issue an ad, and the ad would say you have between 21 days and 120 days for competitors to respond and see if there's a better offer out there. So in that respect, it's very similar to an RFP, but we're asking you all to waive the competitive bidding process, which is another way of saying we're asking you to waive the RFP process. We think that's an unnecessary bureaucratic delay, because if you all can imagine, for the Lincoln Road parking lots, that process started last summer. And only in February did the selection committee give you all the options of who to select. It takes a long time. It adds a year to the process. We don't think it's necessary. You get to understand what else is out there if you go ahead and select us as an unsolicited bid, and then set the time frame for the other competitors to be. It could be 90 days, could be but up to 120 days. So we're also asking for a waiver to achieve 75 feet in height. We think that's important in order to have the complete parking inventory and the Class A office use. And once built, we're just asking for a reservation of 60 spaces. That's the only clawback we want. And that's to serve our office development that's on 13th and Washington. You know, I want you all to understand the entertainment district nominally seems like it's Ocean Drive and Collins, but it does extend over to Washington Avenue as well. And we're trying to transform Washington Avenue with our co-living project there, which is introducing a residential use and renovating an existing office building. Next slide, please. Next slide. Just to refresh your memory, this is at the southwest corner of Collins and 13th. It is square in the middle of the entertainment district, so it has a great potential to really start changing the district. Next slide. So in the new urbanist camp that Liz Plater-Zyberg, Andres Duaney created, this is a five-minute walk. This radius represents 5 minutes. People can walk comfortably for 5 minutes. We're just trying to show you all that whether you go east to the ocean, down to 9th and Collins where Mitch lives or where Mango's, all the way over to Flamingo Park, this can serve a wide variety of businesses and residences that live in this area to give them a place to park. Next slide, please. And next slide. So this gives you an understanding. This is just one way the parking garage could look. We thought it was a nice skin to hide the cars, but so we're going to build 169 spaces, ground floor commercial uses, top floor office space with 75 feet in height. Next slide.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I may. Just on the office space, approximately how much space are we talking about?
8,000 square feet. Okay. Apparently that's a sweet spot for the family offices and other tech firms. Like 8,000 is a good number.
Okay, thank you.
But just know, like, this is what we're offering you all. It's malleable. If you all think that Class A office is more valuable, you can flip-flop a parking level for office. This is our initial offer. It's really your asset. It's up to you. So what we're asking for is a long-term lease to Location Ventures, which is urban, to build garage using source funds, no city funds. Once built, Location operates until investment is returned. I think that's estimated about 10 years. Could be less, but it's estimated about 10 years. And then it comes completely yours. The idea, though, is that right now you derive revenue from a surface parking lot. Once this is constructed, it'll be not only revenue from parking, then you have revenue from the commercial use on the ground floor, you have revenue from the office use, you have revenue from Urban Ventures, which is going to grant you all the fair market value for the 60 spaces that they want to retain. So it goes from one to about four or five different revenue sources for you. So I think it's a good deal. But I'm not a numbers guy, so Rishi's going to talk to that. Next slide, please. So this is as if you're on Washington Avenue walking east toward Collins along 13th Street. It's a very simple building. All you see is a speed ramp going up to the parking levels, and you'll see the office use at the top. It's not a complicated building, but it's an important building. Next slide. Here you're on Collins Avenue walking north toward 13th Street. Just wanted you all to appreciate the depth of the commercial space. Sometimes the depth of these spaces are chopped in a garage, making them really not so good. Oliver's is a great place over there in West, but it could be much better if it wasn't so narrow. But it is. You know, that's just the way that garage is. So we're trying to show where the parking space would not be as much on the first floor. We're giving you a much deeper commercial space, and the floor to ceiling heights is much better. Next slide. So now I'm going to turn it over to Rishi, and he's going to walk you through the rest of the slides.
Commissioners and members of the committee, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. We're excited to be a growing member in the Miami Beach community and bringing some world-class projects, and appreciate all the support that you all have shown us. As part of the mission of backing up what I'm saying there, we think, number one, to satisfy the goal of diversifying the district into a variety of uses that I think we're all on board with, we want to see this get built economically and get built quickly. So that was the intent behind the project proposal that we've put together that we think is very innovative, where, again, we put up every dollar for the project, not a single cent being asked for by the city of Miami Beach. We have recently in-housed a leading South Florida construction company. We're willing to do the job at zero markup, zero profit and overhead, and 100% at cost. The goal here is to see this get built because we think the area needs it, and also to help the overall uses such as our project on 13th and Washington. In addition to that, if we are able to go forward with this timeline, we can commit to year one getting the permitting done along with the city. We've got a great design by Ronaldo Borges. Again, that can be edited, but he's done a brilliant job thus far. getting into construction. We're talking about a year and a half of construction. It's a relatively simple structure to put together. We will start operating the facility by year four, and then ultimately we believe by year 10, we're turning it over to the city as we have collected our revenue and IRR out, and then ultimately this becomes an asset that you will enjoy in perpetuity. The goal behind the plan here is to show that, number one, we're putting our money where our mouth is and believing in the community and helping do something that we think will be beneficial for all of these uses. And then number two, the idea is that we just want to see something happen that is meaningful and impactful for this region where we have become a heavy investor as well. So for us, I appreciate, you know, the consideration, and I'd like for Leonard to talk through the economics that we are proposing, both a before and after. And a final point that I will say, and you'll see this at the end of the presentation, is the value creation. We're talking about something roughly about $20 million of investment. We think by the time you take over, based on market cap rates, you're looking at something north of $40 million in valuation. So for me, this is an innovative deal. I hope you see the out-of-the-box thinking, and thank you for your consideration.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Leonard Roberts, Location Ventures. Next slide, please. Next slide. So here is just an outline of the actual revenue. We anticipate revenue coming in from the parking garage, from all 169 spaces, from permit parking spaces, and from transient parking, which is daily parking, and also for the ground floor retail and from the office space. Combined, you're looking at about $875,000, we're thinking of, the first year for just the actual parking component. The actual retail and commercial combined is about $1.5 million. Next slide. So the total cost, as Rishi discussed, was roughly about $20 million. That $20 million would be funded partially by the equity that Location Ventures would put in, and then a construction loan. Once the construction is completed, the actual Location Ventures would go ahead and refinance it into a permanent loan structure, and then the income generated from the actual parking garage and the commercial will pay down the debt. By the time that 10-year period, or total of 8 years of operation, 2 years of kind of getting it ready, the loan outstanding will be roughly $12.3 million. Next slide. So why do this deal? The current income, what you guys have right now for the 60-plus spaces, is about $370,000 in 2016. In 2020, we're approximating about $420,000. What we did, just to kind of give you an idea of what this, what the garage currently generates, we look at the current income in today's dollars, and that's roughly about $2 million. If we were to take that same 60 spaces after this project is done and rerun it for 10 years, you're looking at about $4 million of today's money. Now, if we do this garage and we implement the office structure, the retail structure, and the 169 spaces, that $4 million potentially grows to $26 million of potential value. So the actual opportunity to improve this space is tremendous. You know, you're going from 4 million to roughly 26. But the question is, you lose 10 years. You lose 10 years of income. So how do you make up that 10 years of income? Well, that if you look at that 10 years that you lose and you look at what the income is generated today, it's about $5 million. So you have the $4 million, $5 million added together, which is about $9 million. After that time frame, you're going to generate $26 million overall. So you more than pay for it. So you can have run this in perpetuity as a parking garage structure. You won't get to the $26 million doing it that way. So this, we feel, is a good deal. The other side, as Rishi said, is that once we pay back the 10% IRR, this turns over 100%. The office, the retail, everything is controlled 100% by the city, the full city's asset. The lease is terminated between Location Ventures and the city.
John, have you had a chance to look at this?
Yeah, same thing.
I haven't spent a lot of time looking at it, but at least first blush, looks pretty good.
Yeah. So, Mr. Larkin, you may not like what I'm about to say. I am very intrigued by this.
and very interested. Mm-hmm. But I need a little bit more time.
Understood.
And I don't know if you, and I apologize to you that we didn't get the chance to talk about this until yesterday.
Fine.
Because of my schedule, not because of your schedule. And I have a lot of questions on the cash flow because, you know, I'm the numbers guy. And I don't know, did you guys have a chance to, I threw out a question yesterday of whether or not you could look at the numbers on like two floors of office versus or how, or if it was all parking. Have you looked at that?
Well, yeah. I took your question to mean what revenue does a parking floor generate versus what revenue does the same square footage generate if it became office.
Yeah.
So upstairs, what we propose is 8,500 square feet of office. It has a large terrace. So I just asked Leonard to say, well, make 12K of office. Do the revenue generation from that versus parking. So I think he has a good answer for you.
Yeah, so if we were to make that full floor, which is approximately 12,000 square feet of office space for a second floor of office, it would be roughly $1 million of revenue.
And then parking?
Per
year?
The parking loss would be about 90. Yes, per year. My apologies. And it would be $90,000 loss of parking revenue.
$90,000 loss of
annual.
So it generates, what does the parking revenue generate?
So so one parking floor will generate $90,000. And so by removing that parking floor, you lose that $90,000 and you gain $1 million.
Got it. So, and why, I was asking myself last night, why do you guys want to do this? Because I know, is it because of the 60 parking spaces? Why, you need those spaces for the other project, right?
Right.
Because other people in the community are saying, hey, I want to buy some spaces, I want to do this, but obviously they're not doing the deal, right? So you guys are putting up your capital. The other thing, the question I had, I started thinking last night about the loss of the cash flow, and I realized because we went through the net present value of the cash flow stream and so forth, but I'm wondering if there's another way to structure the deal that we get the cash flow and we delay the turnover of the, you know, that's a question that I said. So having said all that, Colleen, I'm really interested in this, and I would agree that if we want to go forward, I don't really think that we need a full RFP process because the other process really takes the place of an RFP as long as we give it. But what I would like to do is we're having a special meeting now on the 19th.
Yes, sir.
And I would like to bring this back on the 19th. And I know that's going to push it back a few days for you guys, but I think it's going to be time well spent for at least me. I want to look at the cash flow. I want to see if there's a way to structure this where we can get that, because we're going to have lost revenue for 10 years. I realize it'll be made up on the back end, but in the meantime, someone's going to have to find that money. The other thing is I want to look at whether or not, you know, we want to trade some more office space for that. And also, we haven't really heard from the community. I don't know if you guys have done any outreach to the community and if there are feelings with the buildings in the area, how they feel about that.
So to answer that, we will reach out to the Ocean Drive Preservation Association. I think it's a good group. That's, you know, this is a really unusual area. Usually have the powerful HOAs that dominate, but here it's a little bit unusual. But ADPA is probably like the most relevant stakeholder group in the area. We'll reach out to them. Going back to your initial question, you know, why do we want it? You know, these 60 spaces really would make it the tendencies over on the Washington Avenue office building much more feasible, lower turnover. You know, you can divorce parking from several uses in Miami Beach, hotel, no problem, restaurant, no problem, retail, no problem. But with office, unfortunately, they're still joined at the hip. So it becomes critically important to have office as close as possible to, I mean, have parking as close as possible to the office use. And we're happy to come back on the 19th. If you would like us to meet with John or anybody else from your staff, we're happy to do that as well in advance of the 19th.
So, Commissioner Ariel, it's your item, but and I don't know how you feel about me trying to push it back a little bit. But Monica, thank you for coming over. You probably heard the word parking mentioned, and you came over because have you had a chance to look at this cash flow stream, and can you verify that the numbers that they're using and the capacity is accurate?
So my expertise is not in that field. I can only talk to you about parking, okay? And I could tell you that we need parking in that area. I could tell you that bringing parking to that area will revitalize Washington Avenue. I could tell you that owners of properties on Washington Avenue were very upset when we postponed, because we considered building a garage there one time, right? I could tell you that in our forecast for next year, parking, we're forecasting 100 plus percent over pre-COVID. Okay, so
in that area?
Citywide, but particularly in that area. And mind you, we lose money, for example, when we close all those spaces on Collins and Washington, we lose money there, but parking is back. And so we need parking in that area. I could list all of these businesses on Ocean Drive. They don't have employee parking. Okay, so my idea would be, what if we built a garage and assured you 60 spaces, and I am sure you're going to find another 15, 20 and more businesses that would come knocking on our door and say, hey, you know, I need this for office space, and then in the evenings, we release it to the entertainment district, you know? It just makes a lot of sense, and that is a beautiful location. It's also a beautiful location for office space. But, you know, that's a decision for you folks to make, but I can tell you, if you build it, we will fill it.
Great. So the parking, there's a parking garage that's, I like that little slogan. That's clever. I see what you did with that. There's a parking garage about a half a block away, closer to the Ocean Drive. And that garage stays full?
That garage is full. And then remember that you have a lot of residents in the area, some of which do not have parking in their buildings. And so we have some resident, we call that Zone 5. We have some residents parking there, but that garage is often very full. And if you talk to people like, for example, I'm sure you've heard from David Wallach, that, you know, they need parking.
Yeah.
They need parking. And the 7th Street garage remains pretty full as well. So, I mean, however we do it, it's a piece of land that could give much more than it has today.
Yeah. So, Mr. Larkin, let me ask a question. Thanks, Monica. So, to Monica's point on the 60 spaces that you need to enhance your office opportunity a block away, would you need those spaces at night?
I don't think so, but I want to confer with Rishi.
But you don't have to answer the question now. You can. So, colleagues, is it okay if we bring this back on the night?
Can I weigh in?
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. And a lot of my comments, I think, are aligned with both of yours. I do obviously believe there's a parking need. For me, I'm actually a little more excited about a catalyst project. That, to me, is something that really matters. We're trying to transform that area. Something and something fast is good. So I, too, would want to understand better the mix of office versus parking. I heard 8,000 feet. I also understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but you all have represented to me that you would actually handle the leasing side of the office. And I'd like to continue that conversation as to how quickly we could do something so that this becomes, again, a catalyst for others who want to do it. I am fine to defer. We're talking 2 or 3 weeks. I think that's not bad. I do want to hear from the community, the Ocean Drive Association, the Washington Avenue BID, MDPL. We do need to hear from these stakeholders. I also have just one question for the administration. I think if I read the recommendation properly, I think you lean towards an RFP. My leaning is probably in line with my colleagues of speed here is important. So I tend to want to lean back towards more of this advertisement, shorter. Strong objection to that, or something you could digest?
Not at all. We agree.
Oh, okay. Then that's great. And I think we bring it back. And I, too, we spent some quality time, but I'd like to spend more quality time to understand and explore some of the things we've discussed today. But the community outreach is critical in advance of that meeting.
Sure thing.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, there is one caller who's been waiting for some time, if you're open to public comment.
Okay, let's go ahead and take the public comment.
Colin, user number 1, you have 2 minutes.
you're on mute, you need to unmute. We cannot hear you.
I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, this is Matthew Galtanoff, and I've been watching this presentation this morning, and it's really interesting, and I thank you, of course, for taking the public comment here. But I do have a few questions. One, is a parking garage the highest and the best use of this land and the opportunity that it presents? Another is an interesting comment that was made is that the parking garage will be built at a zero markup, zero profit, 100% at cost. But the numbers that were attached to the item on the agenda say that it's $110,000 per parking space. And I just go back to the conversation that was at commission a few weeks ago on the 72nd Street parking garage and community center. And I believe that it was represented that those spots could be built at $30,000 a spot. So there's such a large delta between the two. I kind of really am curious about that. So between those two questions, you know, I think it's important, you know, is we want to be a city that, you know, vibrant tropical island destination where we put people first, more walkability, or do we want to be a city where we look at, you know, how can we bring as many cars into our city? How can we bring parking as close to the destinations to where we're going? It kind of seems like backwards for this vibrant tropical place that we strive to be, that we are today. So just a couple questions there and perhaps some things that we could think about or that you all could think about as you proceed to the next step. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in. Thank you. So, Michael, John, let's put this on the agenda for the 19th. I'm going to need more time with you.
Sure.
And I would like you to schedule a meeting with John.
Yes, sir.
So John can go through all the numbers. I am of the opinion that if we move forward, that we don't need a formal RFP, that as long as we give others the opportunity to look at this, that to me is an RFP. But I would like you guys to look at the cash flow. I don't know if there's any way that we could restructure the thinking to get the cash flow rather than lose the cash flow. Maybe you're going to tell me the numbers just don't work. Maybe you're going to tell me it adds another 5 years or whatever to turn over the property. Not need a referendum, right?
It would not.
Okay. It could be 15 years, Commissioner, if the turnover back to you all, maybe 15 years if you all get the 300,000 plus.
And then I want Monica to look at the numbers and verify the spaces. I mean, it's very interesting, the addition of spaces. There's very much a need for parking for, quite frankly, the employees, the nightlife and the clubs there, they cannot get parking for their employees. And so I'm also interested if you were to get this 60 allocation, which, people are going to say, why not me? And I'm saying, well, because somebody's putting up a substantial amount of capital. That's why. Mm-hmm. But it would be obviously better for the city if you didn't need all of those spaces 24 hours a day. And if you're thinking that they're going to be for office, then maybe, 75% of them or so get freed up at night for you. So anyway, all those things we need to look at, and I appreciate your time. I'm sorry that we kept you waiting so long, but if you'll allow us, we'll bring this back on the 19th, and we'll continue the conversation there. In the meantime, please reach out to my office, and I'm sure my colleagues will want more information as well.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you, everybody, for your time.
Yeah, I just want to say a very interesting project, and thanks for being willing to invest in our city. I'm very supportive. We'll just tweak it out. I'd like to ask John, please do some vetting and then just give us your recommendation as to the numbers. And, Monica, I know you're not advocating for this project, but I think it was very helpful that you told us that, we need more parking. So.
Cards. As promised, I did do an analysis of the use of access cards, and so I'm going to use this as an example, Collins Park. It's pretty similar, right? Because you have a nightlife and a daylife, right? And the great majority of access cards are used during the day. Mm-hmm. And in the evenings, for example, at Collins Park, in the evenings and weekends, we fill the garage with beachgoers and people going in the area. So transient and access cards, great during the day for office use, and then in the evening we can still accommodate. So for that reason, at Collins Park, we're selling 60% of the total number of spaces to access cards.
Well, okay, great. Great. How's that park doing, that garage doing, Collins Park?
It gets better every day. So right now, for the first 2 weeks of March, weekend entries were over $500 cars. Uh-huh. On the weekends, at different times, of course, and average for the entire week, over 400 entries.
Well,
without the access cards. So, okay. Getting better.
Thank you. All right, Kyle. Yeah, this will go very quickly. I will invite the administration to give a brief comment, but I sort of teed up my thoughts as it related to lighting, resiliency, other capital needs, so we have a holistic view. I believe we're going to hear that at our May budget workshop. That's the right time to go deep. But, John, let me invite you with the administration to sort of give the headlines.
Yeah, just a quick comment is that we've kind of revamped our capital budget process this year to try to capture a lot more of the out-year information. We're really good at budgeting for 1 year, so we're trying to get better at a five-year, and also to really get our arms around all those unfunded needs and those type of items across all the different disciplines. That's really what we're focusing on this year, and we think by May 20th we'll have that information.
So by May, when we do the budget retreat, you're going to have a five-year plan for capital, or you'll have a one-year plan for the immediate budget, but you're going to try to have, the next 4 years?
Yeah, we're always looking at a five-year. It's just that it's more of a plan, a loose plan, and we're trying to make it a tighter plan. And in doing so, we're also trying to understand where are we short, where are those needs. We ran into a lot of those unfunded needs last year, and so we really want to get our arms around that. That's been a priority from the city manager.
Okay, good. Commissioner, are you okay?
Good.
All right, thank you. All right, we've got one more item, item 16. We need to talk about, John, I'm going to let you tee this up because this was something you need.
Sure. So these are the new parking bonds that are necessary, about $19.5 million worth to complete the funding for the 72nd Street project. And so we have to bring any new bonds to the Finance Committee for approval. And really, we're looking for authorization for not only the new bonds, but also potential refunding right now, given the conditions with the war in Ukraine and so on. Things aren't looking like we would probably do it, but depending on the situation, if over the next couple of months before we get to the final hurdle, if we had the opportunity to do it and the conditions were right, we would like to have that authorization in place.
And this is just the funding for what the commission approved for a part of the overall funding for the 72nd Street project, right?
Right. It's the $19.5 million for the parking bond and then a potential refunding depending on market conditions.
I sense that I'm in the minority here, but I've been pretty consistent. This is too big a price tag, so I'm not going to support this today, and I respect my colleagues with a different view.
I want to defer to John. What's your recommendation here?
The recommendation is to go ahead and authorize the issuance of the new bonds and authorize potential refunding if the market conditions are right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with you, so I'm supportive. All right. The motion has been moved, and I'll second it and show it done 2-1. Okay. I don't think we have any more business, so seeing no more business.
You hit it right on the mark, 3 hours.
We are adjourned. We're adjourned.
Good
Thank
job.
You.